ka-ching sounder ready now. Oh, wait, I have the ka-ching and there's no thing.
There's no thing.
Where's it live from the ka-ching studios? It's not even there. Oh, do we try it again? Okay, let's take another. There you go. Let's take another rung. No one knows.
And now, coming to you from the Super Digital Studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio, this is the Rick Emerson Show.
Oh, God damn it. Oh, I hate me. I hate me with everything in me.
Well, you get the idea.
Why, hello there. Welcome to another flawless broadcast. It's 2 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of April of the year of our Lord, 2007. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious Super Digital Studios, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio Portland, this, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. It is Monday, and welcome to Day 12. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Have you ever noticed this, that if you say a phone number one way for a long time and then you try to say it even slightly differently, something you can't forget, it's like muscle memory. You can't remember how to do it. 503-733-2970. Yeah, I really have to think it through. It didn't come automatically. 503, no one cares. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your corrections, your 2 cents, your what have you. If you'd like to engage with us electronically speaking, you can do that as well. It's rick at rickemerson.com today and every day. Rick at rickemerson.com. Monday, thank you for coming along. Hope you had a safe and satisfying weekend on all fronts. It's 503-733-2. I'm spitting all over my matrix and all over myself. For the love of God.
You're kind of a mess today.
You know why?
I know why.
No visa.
And you brought it up to me about 6 times. Did I tell you that yet, sir? I'm doing that.
I'm doing that thing like Chevy Chase in Modern Problems where he's on the floor trying to snort the old whiteout. Walking ahead. Anybody have any viso? Can you help me out? A little help? Like, you see those guys on Hawthorne just trying to bub? But, like, not even chain, not even money, just like the end of a cigarette. Pardon me, sir. Can you spare just the butt? Just a, come on. Maybe just some ash. Just let me smell the smoke, sir. I've twice asked Scotty J if he had any viso, quote, hidden somewhere. And if that doesn't sound like junky behavior, I don't know what it is. I mean, that's the thing. Once, and then like 10 minutes later, forgetting that I had already asked him once, I walk up to Scotty, and I swear to God, I just sound like Jared Leto at the end of a three-day bender. So, Scotty, do you have any visa, like, hidden somewhere, man? Come on, help me out. You know I do it for you. And then he's not even fazed by it. I don't think he drinks the stuff that frequently. So he's not even bothered. Because I said, do you have any Visa Scotty J? And he said, no, I don't, sorry. And then I came back 10 minutes later, and I'm unclear about whether I forgot that I had previously asked him or whether I thought I was going to catch him off guard and, like, shake some loose. So I catch him about 10 minutes later, and Scotty, do you have any Visa? No, Rick, I don't, I'm sorry. Didn't even look up, didn't even make eye contact, just kept pecking away at the keyboard. Could have been lying to me for all I know. And then I walked into Jeff McGinley's office. Jeff McGinley, do you have any Visa? He's like soldering away. No, I don't. Sorry. And the thing is, here's the other junkie-like behavior that drink creates. I mean this as a compliment, by the way. Is that I instinctively and just reflexively believe that everybody's lying to me when they say they don't have any.
You have a problem, my friend.
Do you have any Visa, Jeff? No, I don't. In the back of my head, he's lying. He's lying. There's a crowbar right there. Pretty soon I'll be living in a flop house downtown, just squeezing toothpaste into the cracks in the wall so that the invisible robot insect machines can't look at me. All right.
Fantastic. Take the bodies, leave me alone!
It's 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by today. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. And just one final observation about Bezo and how I don't have any. And how I really am going to play through the pain because I'm a professional. It's what I do.
You're doing a good job so far.
It's what I do. I'm a broadcaster. I will broadcast with poise and aplomb as is my job description. I'm just going to say this, that I got this cup of coffee in my hand. It's not really doing the trick. I mean, coffee's great and all, but it didn't quite pack the Bezo punch. But at about 9 minutes to showtime, I ran out of the studio, and I swear to God, I ran across the street and bolted through traffic to that liquor store across the street, because the liquor store over there, which is by the Swedish massage place, God damn it, sounds like we live in a skeezy neighborhood. There's the plant pantry and the Swedish massage place, and then a liquor store. CBS Radio only broadcasts out of the finest neighborhood. But I run across the street to the liquor store because they sell Bezo over there. And then I get there and I see the saddest sign, which is the open sign that's turned off. You know, the neon open sign, but it's just the saddest, burned out, you know, totally off, lights inside off, door bolted, big wrought iron grill over the front. So there is no joy in Mudville, and there is no Bezo in the studio. And the empty Bezo fridge is just sitting there, taunting me. Taunting me like a blacked out tooth. Well, in any event, it's 503-733-2970. It's all right. We're going to get through it together, you and I. You probably have Bezo. Okay. Rick@rickemerson.com is the email address. What's coming up today? Peter Carlin for the Oregonian is going to be joining us today. We'll talk about last night's Sopranos. The Sopranos, which for my money continues to disappoint each and every single week. They're really not doing a whole lot to convince me that they know what they're doing with this last season. Now, it's not like I'm in a position to tell David Chase what to do, but behold now as I tell David Chase what to do. You've got to pull it together, man. There's only 5 episodes left. I mean, what was arguably the greatest work of pop culture of the later 20th century, what most reasonable, objective people would consider one of the top 10 television shows ever created, ever. I mean, anywhere, ever. And it's just that the thing is just falling into disrepair like a neglected summer home. I mean, I hope that these last 5 episodes of The Sopranos are not a waste of my time, because that's how I feel like this season has been. I feel like last season was only, you know, was only par. So it remains to be seen. We'll talk about The Sopranos, talk about Entourage. We will talk about The Shield and so forth. What else coming up? Boy George continues to go crazy-er. Bob Costantini will join us from the Hill. You said that Lisa was in Atlanta today?
Yeah, it was weird because I call Richard every day. Well, Laura Caviezel a lot, but Richard's working for her right now. And I called him, and he's like, oh, yeah, Lisa's in the back. She's here visiting us, and I could hear her talking, and it was weird. Those two worlds colliding.
Oh, weird to hear her lurking in the back. Well,
yeah.
it was like when Jim Roop appeared the day of the listener party, and Jim Roop, see, we didn't tell people this, but, you know, Jim Roop was unveiled at the listener party as the mystery guest. But he actually came by, I don't know, at around 2 o'clock that afternoon and just hung out in the studio silently, sort of lurking in a corner, Ray-Bans intact, and just watching us through the last hour of the show. And it was just so weird to hear him open his mouth and go, hi, I'm Jim Roop. And it was so weird. It caused like some weird cognitive disconnect. In any event, Bob Costantini going to join us today. And I'm going to fix his little red wagon. I'm going to ask him a couple questions about this Iraq funding thing, which I know sounds tedious, but I swear to God it'll be interesting when I do it. Because there's some crap I just don't understand, and I don't like not knowing stuff. So we're going to find out some things from him. Jim Roop will be speaking with us today about the increasingly crazy Phil Spector. They ought to just take all of those guys, Phil Spector, Boy George, and stick them all in a house somewhere. And just, you know, like $1.99 a week to watch that. To see who ends up dead first. Let's see. I do believe, now I can't say definitively this is the case, I do believe we have the first line of our Portland anthem. I'm not going to reveal it quite yet. It's pretty good, though. It's pretty good. It's kind of funny. It describes a lot of things about the city. It's sort of witty, and it's sort of a pun on something else. It feels a little anthemic. It feels sweeping. It feels like it has sort of a panoramic overview. So later on, we will reveal the first line, I believe, of the Portland anthem, which we'll be creating, which means we can move on to the second line, which I think will actually come a lot faster now. Because once you have the first line, you have everything. You have the meter, you have the cadence, you have everything. And so the second line will come together, I think, a lot easier, a lot faster. We are going to create that song line by line, and then we'll record it, and we will present it to the city and demand that they acknowledge its genius. We'll do that. What else? If we have time, We will do each the worst song you've ever heard. We will today, though, definitely continue our hunt for the second worst story of all time. That was supposed to happen Friday, but it didn't because... Because something happened. Oh, because Scott Daly started run amok about his the goddamn World of Warcraft game. So we will today continue our search for the second worst story of all time. And plus, just a big pile of... You hear this right here? You know what this is? That's just a huge pile of news that there's no place for it. There's nowhere to put it. Just stuff that's just stacked up here. All right, we're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon, who is gracing the back of the Portland Mercury for, what, another 3 days?
Yes.
When does it change over, Thursday?
Wednesday evening.
So today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, kids, that's all the time you have to rush out and get yourself a copy of the Portland Mercury, which is graced on the back by the wonderful and topless visage of our own Sarah X. Dillon.
Topless.
You are topless. We had this discussion last week. It's time to move on. I'm not saying that it's a prurient photo in any way. It's very... This is what you always...
It's weird because I'm only showing the tops of my shoulders, but that's the first thing that people say. They're like, oh, you're naked on the back of there.
Well,
you can't even see anything.
It's because you typically walk around in a burqa.
That's true.
I mean, it's like even right now, I'm going to point this out. It is summertime, almost. Is it summertime? It's not. It's spring, though, right? Okay. So it's essentially spring. It's very warm outside. It's very warm inside. And I swear to God, you've got a hoodie zipped all the way up to your neck right now.
It's cold
in
here.
And the sleeves are pulled all the way down to your hands. I'm just saying.
Well, when I was riding my bike to work today, Rick Emerson, it was a little cold.
Why would you say that? What's that all about?
I don't know. I'm sure the heat is really nice in your car.
I meant to, I had my bicycling clothing set out this morning. I had it laid out. It didn't really come together for me the way I planned.
You totally have the mental block. You're never going to be able to get back on that bicycle.
I bicycled this weekend. I just didn't bicycle to work today. I did bicycle this week. I bicycled I did like a 15-mile bike ride this weekend. I just didn't do it this morning when it can be proven. I did it this weekend when there was no one around to corroborate it. All right. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today. Several bees are injured when a truck carrying them is involved in the crash at I-205 this morning.
Fantastic.
Brittany gets pulled over for speeding in L.A. Venus Flytrap talks about the new WKRP DVD release, but none of these are as good as this story. Do you really want to kill me? Boy George is arrested for allegedly holding a male escort prisoner following a salacious romp in his London flat.
A salacious romp.
I don't know why the word romp it fills me with such a sense of ooginess, but it really does. In this case, it would be.
And the thing about Boy George is that of the Sun? Is that where that's from?
Yep, it's from the Sun.
He looks more and more, fill in the blank, he looks more and more like Sid Barrett every day. He looks more and more like Uncle Fester every day. He looks more and more like just a random crazy guy who would be standing downtown covered in his own filth every day. I mean, it's hard to believe that there was a time when Boy George, and I'll say this, there was a time when Boy George was sort of a pretty-looking man. But now, maybe that was because he dressed as a woman and had 15 pounds of makeup on his face all the time. But there was, if you've seen them, and then that just stopped. I mean, there was no gradual transition in the Boy George look department. It was all through the 80s when, by his own admission, he tried as much as possible to look like a woman because he was having a relationship with, what's his name? Paul, whatever that guy's name was. I think the guitarist or the drummer?
Drummer.
That's right, the drummer for the Culture Club. He and Boy George were having a relationship. And Boy George, real name George O'Dowd, said on Behind the Music, I think, he said, well, I tried to look as much like a woman as possible. And I know this sounds like a really bizarre statement, but if you go back and look at photos of George Michael from back in the day, back in like...
Boy George.
It's a different George.
I'm
it's
always doing that, too.
Did somebody go with Boy George Michael for Halloween? Because if not, that's a gimme right there. That's a given.
You go back and you look at pictures of Boy George from back in the Culture Club, back in the Karma Chameleon, Church of the Poison Mind era. I know this makes me sound like a little bit of a fruitcake. I'm just going to say, he does bear, like if you were... I know this doesn't sound like a compliment, but if you were to squint, or maybe have your glasses off, or just be looking at him from really far away, he did look ever in the face area... ever so slightly like Kate Winslet. That's all I'm saying. I think it's the nose.
Boy George?
Yeah. Not on the body, obviously, because he's a stout fellow. Looks like a barrel of nails. Like a barrel of nails with rouge. I'm just saying, if we look at Boy George's face in about 1986, and then you kind of shut your eyes just enough that everything goes fuzzy, he sort of looks like Kate Winslet. And I don't really know who that's more of a knock on.
I'm just saying it's true. Anyway, not now. But those days are gone. Gone a long time. He looks... Boy, George looked bad. He looked all kind of bad. I mean, there's just no... He does look like Pink Floyd founder Sid Barrett right before he died. Like he just sort of sitting around... Like he'd been sitting around eating a lot of pork chops and sweating. What do you do? I sit around the house and I eat big piles of ham. What else do you do? Nothing. I perspire a little. Okay, well done, Sid. That's exactly what Boy George looks like in this story. And there's a true, we won't get to it now, but there's a truly horrifying quotation from this Boy George story as well. Which, and this is incidentally, and not to get sit here and spend all my time on Boy George, but this is why I never believe anybody when they say they're clean and sober. And it's always at the end of those behind the music things where, what's his name, Paul Gallagher, the narrator, comes on and says, you know, after battling his demons for the better part of 25 years, Boy George says he's clean and sober and has never been happier to be making music. And then it's always a lie. And the show goes, well, now that I'm clean and sober, I can appreciate music in a way that I didn't. And I find that really the work I'm creating now is, it's the best I've ever done. Lie. Lie. Goddamn lie. I will tell you, every one of those guys has a big tub of Seconal just sitting right off camera, right out of frame. Standing with Leif Garrett. Remember Leif Garrett bumping his gums about, I'm clean and sober now. After doing that hideous thing where they made him meet the guy in the wheelchair with the bad mullet that he... I'm probably talking about stuff that not even anybody even remembers now, but I'm just saying, they all follow the Leif Garrett model, because that was the first behind the music that I remember everybody talking about. Leif Garrett and that stupid do-rag he kept around his head.
That was very distracting.
Yeah, that he was, and he had to go meet the guy with the weird power mullet, Billy Ray Cyrus mullet in the wheelchair, and it's all very, and then Leif, you know, I'm clean and sober, and it really is, being sober is the best way to be, and the guy was clearly just so swacked. The guy was just gapped to the nines. I mean, you could just, it just came off of him in waves. I mean, really, I mean, you could smoke that guy's perspiration and have like a 3-day high off of it. So, all right, whatever. Why have I written this down? Sarah Church. Oh, that's not Church. No, it's Chuck. Sarah Chuck.
Chuck.
Do we want to talk about that?
I have no idea. Oh! Well, we can.
We are endeavoring to get Portland author, famed wordsmith, Chuck Palahniuk, on the program. And I'm going to say right now, that may happen, it may not happen. I don't know. He's going to be in the building later this week, because he's doing that reading on Wednesday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Powell's?
Wednesday at the Baghdad Theater at 7 p.m.
So he's doing that. So Chuck Palahniuk's doing a reading Wednesday. He's going to be in the building for that. And so we are endeavoring to have Chuck Palahniuk share a few minutes with us later on this week.
Oh, it's like, I don't even want to think about it, because that would be just so awesome.
See, it's like, and I'm not, I mean, it's not, the, and it's not that I'm not excited about it, I really am. I'm not a fetishist of his work the way that a lot of people are. But he's, you know, but he's, what kind of a Portlander would I be if I didn't, you know, if we didn't
have
Chuck Palahniuk? Seriously, what kind of a man would I be? But that all adds up to it being the greatest, weirdest week ever, because if we can get Chuck Palahniuk on the show, and Scotty, in fact, while we're doing this, let's...
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
We're now joined on the Rick Emerson Show by our intrepid PA, the one and only Scotty J, who looks suntan or hangover?
Majorly sunburned.
Uh-huh.
A little mixture of both.
Well, I was going to say, did one lead to the other, perhaps?
No, I'm telling you, my nose, it's the first thing to burn.
You're wearing the same shirt you were wearing on Friday.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Well, it's clean.
Uh-huh.
I hosed it off in the backyard.
Don't talk about hosing things off, please. All right, so where do we stand with Alice Cooper?
I don't know, Rick. Why don't you open this up and tell me?
Oh, were you waiting for this? Had you planned this?
Oh, my God.
Hold on. I've been handed... Scotty's giving me a package.
So
I've been handed a large package from Scotty J. This is from Playback Producers LLC to Scotty J. KCMD. Was it a thrill to get a package in the mail that said to Scotty J?
It was, but then I knew it wasn't mine, but well, that's fine.
No, none of my packages for me. The packages that I get in my box are all for Sarah. Because somehow Sarah is the new Dave Paul, who was the new Matt Peterson. And just everything I get, everything that comes to the station, just addressed it for Sarah.
I give you everything for the most part.
All right, I am opening this package. I'm taking it out. Look at that. A brand new copy of Alice Cooper, Golf Monster. A rock and roller's 12 steps to becoming a golf addict. Look at that. Come on.
Now, you have 4 days to get through that, so you'll know what to
Alice
say.
Alice Cooper with Keith and Kent Zimmerman. It took three people to write a book about how to golf.
I don't know if it's autographed or not.
Oh, man.
Check.
Boy, he looks like he's about 400 years old. God love Alice Cooper, and I really do. Seriously, take a good long look at that. Don't drink, kids. Scotty, if you want to know why you got to keep your drinking in check, take a good long look at that cover right there.
Oh, no, I take vitamins.
Uh-huh. Yeah, whatever you say. All right, so Alice Cooper, so are we good to go? We're locked and loaded?
Yes.
I will be interviewing Alice Cooper this Friday.
So you should probably thumb through that book this week. It'll give you some.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm going to read it tonight. I'm going to read it tonight in one sitting. The thing is, you have probably no good. You cannot appreciate how long. I've been doing talk radio for about 13 years. I've been on the radio for, I don't know, how old am I? 34, 20 years. So there are people on my list that I got to interview, that I got to talk to, got to meet before I die. And there's only really a handful left because I've been fortunate enough to interview a lot of people. I mean, even people that you wouldn't necessarily think of, like Weird Al Yankovic, who I had Weird Al Yankovic in the studio with me for a couple hours years ago. I've talked to Mike Ness from Social Distortion. I've talked to Henry Rollins. A lot of the other guys, I met Aaron Sorkin, although it wasn't on the air. A lot of the guys I want to talk to are dead, so they're sort of off the list. Alice Cooper, really, I was talking to Joni DeRoshi about this the other day. Alice Cooper really is the biggest name remaining on the list, except for possibly one of the guys from Led Zeppelin, but that's probably never going to happen. So Alice Cooper is probably the single person on my list of folks I wanted to interview before I die. Alice Cooper was probably the biggest single name, or is. So you are saying, Scotty J, that due to your efforts this Friday, I will be talking to Alice Cooper.
Yes.
This is like that. This is like that time when Don Geronimo got to interview Brian Wilson, and he just gibbered himself into a nervous frenzy for like 4 days, and I think he broke out at hives because he was so nervous about interviewing Brian Wilson. So,
I think it's going to go good. And the topic, the
don't
topic
screw
is
it up.
Great too. So,
all right, how long do I have with him? Like 15 minutes, something like that.
10, 15.
Well, I'll stretch it.
Yeah,
right. Fantastic.
If you entertain him, he'll be on the phone longer.
We got to get him to cut a liner. I got to get him to cut some sort of a hello. You know, one of his classic Alice Cooper. You know, this is Alice Cooper. One of where he's all like in character. Fantastic. And he's holding a bloody golf club. Boy, whatever happened to? I think we know what happened to Baby Jane. Jesus. God damn. All right. Fantastic. All right. So not that I have any right to ask anything of you, Scotty, I'm going to be nice to you for the rest of the day.
For the rest of my
because
life.
Because you got out. No, but for the rest of today.
Hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, Friday's not here yet. Friday could come and I could be staring at that phone and
that
nobody
would be
could
a
call.
Bad day.
Alice doesn't call. Alice doesn't call. Scotty doesn't work. That's the.
Oh.
Alice don't
work anyway.
Scotty don't eat. Okay, so where are we on Nellie Olson?
Nellie, he was supposed to call me back on Friday and did not. So I will.
He who?
There's
a guy,
another producer.
All right.
Booker,
so, but you are pursuing TV's Nellie Olson.
Yes.
All right.
Is that supposed to happen the same day? Is that what we keep talking about?
Well, she's in town. Well, she's in town. She's performing that night. She's performing Friday. So
maybe we can get her in here. So on the phone with Alice. Her in here, that'll be a great day.
On the phone with Alice Cooper while I'm talking to Nellie Olson.
Exactly.
How fantastic would that be? And then the thing is, there is every chance that George Carlin will be on the phone sometime that day as well, that Friday. I don't know that that's the case, but it might be the case.
You know, he should either be Friday or Thursday to promote it.
Do you
That'd
realize right now we have four different balls in the air here? Alice Cooper, Nellie Olson, George Carlin, and Chuck Palahniuk. Really, if even two quarters of that stuff comes together, we can just die, all of us, in some sort of a suicide pact here on the air.
No, I smell what I talk to you about every other day.
That sentence doesn't make any sense, Scotty.
National.
I don't know what you're talking about, but
instead of smelling a remote, I smell national.
Oh, I see. Plastics.
All right.
So, excellent. Well, thank you, Scotty. God bless you. Oh, wait, how's the smoking? Did you smoke this weekend?
Yes, I did.
Failure. Failure!
But I'm back on, I mean.
No, just, see?
Yeah.
This is
how many cigarettes did you have?
How many did you have? How many days this weekend did you smoke? Smoke both Saturday and Sunday?
Yes.
Okay, so it doesn't really matter.
I probably had about seven on Saturday night.
And you smoked half a pack. That's like a third of a pack at least.
Yeah.
That's almost half a pack.
And then probably about five or six yesterday. And
so you smoked a pack of cigarettes over the weekend
today.
Almost. That's almost a pack of cigarettes.
Hey, man, one of these days I'll say, whatever.
Now, listen, now I know that you may feel like this violates my my promise to be nice to you today, but this is tough love, Scotty. You can't, seriously, because when we were offering last week, and after this, I'm going to wash my hands of you. I'm going to be done with you. After that, we offered to help you quit smoking last week, and your claim was, I don't want your help because I want to be able to smoke, and these are your words now, a cigarette or two every now and again. You smoked almost half a pack on Saturday alone.
Well, it was quite the night.
I would like you to confess now that you will not be quitting smoking now or ever.
I can't do that because I...
Don't,
you know what smoking... So smoking is kind of like alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous.
Uh-huh.
Those guys do one day at a time, right? I can't...
You don't even do one day at a time.
I do too, man. You smoked 7 days.
You went half a pack on Saturday and half a pack on Sunday. Which...
Okay, well, the Saturday thing was because we were having a good time with adult beverages on Saturday.
So really, your quitting smoking is dependent upon you never drinking or having a good time.
I didn't feel so great on Sunday, and I didn't want to feel bad from the night's prior
motivations. Why go through withdrawal?
Yeah. I didn't want to withdraw from two things on Sunday, so that's what happened there. But today I'm feeling great.
You're not going to quit smoking. Just admit it. Admit it now and we'll let you go.
I'm working on it. Let's put it that way.
You want to place a dollar value? You want to place a wager on it?
What, every time I smoke, I pay a dollar?
No, just the fact that you will still be smoking at the same rate like a month from now.
At the same rate?
Yeah.
I hope not.
You smoked a pack this weekend.
I did not.
You... No, but Scotty...
Well, it makes it worse if you lie.
Seriously, you admit to smoking 6 or 7 on Saturday means you're probably shaving it by 30%.
How many is in a pack? 20?
20. You admitted to smoking 15 already. Are you going to tell me, as a smoker, you smoked 15 and just left the other five?
Why don't I run to Scotty's bag really quick and see how many cigarettes he's left in the packet?
There's none. Go ahead.
Of course there's none left. No, it's because he smoked them all.
He has them in his pocket.
Because he smoked the whole pack. That's why there are none left. It's because you smoked the entire pack.
Right. This is a one day at a time.
It's not, though.
One of these days, I'll be able to say, clean bill of health, I'm not doing this anymore, but I've done battling.
It was a one day at a time thing on Saturday when you smoked half a pack.
No, that was a...
And then on Sunday when you smoked half a pack.
All right.
Thank you, Scotty. Thank you for booking Alice Cooper.
Bye, Scotty.
All right.
That's so a shame.
I really need some Viso. All right, it's 503-733-2970. I haven't even talked about the phone lines. Let me do a couple things. First of all, and just my thing about the Viso is that I did this horrible thing last night where...
An entire pizza alone?
No, I didn't. No, Laura was there. So we watched The Sopranos, we watched Entourage, and then, you know, I'm a big S.H.I.E.L.D. fan, but here's the thing that I found out. I found out that the S.H.I.E.L.D. also airs in France. They air it in France, and it started at the same time. But the thing is, France airs two episodes a week. We only get one episode a week here. And so what I discovered is, in France, this season, I think, is over. It's all aired. And so this guy emails me, and I got a few emails like this, but this guy emails me on Friday, and he's like, hey, Rick, I know you're a big fan of the S.H.I.E.L.D. Hey, tell me what you would have done in this situation. This guy says, I know you're a big fan of the S.H.I.E.L.D. You may know that it already aired in France. The season is already done, and this season has just been jaw-droppingly good. He's like, you know, there are three episodes left. He's like, don't give this to anybody else. Don't pass it on. He's like, click on this link. It'll take you to a private website that I have set up, and you can watch the rest of the season right there. Which is like another month in America. Here, we got like another 3-4 weeks before the season will be done. He's like, click on this link, and you can watch the rest of the season right now. What would you do? What would you do if somebody came to you right now and said, whatever show you watch, like, you can watch the next three episodes right now, all at once, no waiting?
Oh, I'd totally do it.
You would totally do it, right?
Yeah.
Because Laura was like, no, you're denying yourself the television experience of one episode at a time. And I asked her, I said, well, what would you do if the new Harry Potter book just showed up on your front porch right now? She's like, well, I'd totally read it. So that was my thing. So I didn't watch them all, but I stayed up last night watching. I watched two of the final three episodes, which are just... I'm not going to give anything away. I will not spoil.
Are they good?
Oh, yeah. I won't spoil anything, but goddamn. Just when you think the punishment is done, that show is like one endless kick in the gut. That show is like one... That show is like being force-fed Drano over and over and over and over again. I mean, it's so good, but goddamn, it's a brutal program. Anyway, so I didn't get to bed till like 2:30, and then I did that. I slept so badly last night.
I could not sleep last night. I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning and didn't fall asleep till like 7.
And see, and you know, and I've already talked to a couple people here today who are the same thing, and you know, I was doing that terrible because the shield was so intense. It was so dark and so horrifying that it was like infesting my dreams. And then this is the kind of bad staying awake that I was doing. It was like this, where I would wake up and be checking the clock about every 10, 12 minutes. Like I would wake up and I go, 2:35, 3:12, 3:24, 3:56, 4:18, 4:45. So I know that I never went for more than half an hour.
Me
straight.
Either. Okay, yeah, because I thought it was... You and I are kind of like this. Like, we usually have bad off-sleep.
And then I get in the day and there's no Viso. So, A, I'm all weirded out, and I'm not depressed, but I'm all weirded out because I had these weird, horrible nightmares because of the shield, which was just the darkest, most horrifying thing I've ever seen. And so I have all of these weird dreams, and then I'm not really sleeping, and then I got no Viso this morning. So if I sound a little crazy today, that's kind of where that's coming from. Oh, I haven't even talked about the phone lines. Don't even get me started on the phones. I'll take a couple real quickly, and then we'll break. We got Bob Costantini coming up here in a few. Lauren, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello there.
Hola, Rick.
What's up?
Actually, two things. One, just really quick. I didn't know if you'd be interested, but the Tonic Lounge starting on May 6th. They're starting to play Buffy the Vampire Slayer from season one.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
They're going to do it, I think, every week.
Excellent.
The other is, so timely with the delay, Scotty and his smoking. He's just...
No, you're totally correct about that, sir.
I smoked two packs a day for 20 years, and I quit.
Well, here's the thing about Scotty, and Sarah and I were talking about this, because Sarah...
so many things.
Well, Sarah and Scott Daly and I were talking about this, that... Here's the thing. I can respect someone who smokes and at least says, smoke, what are you going to do? Up yours, you know? And it's like, well, that's fine. It's like a person who is overweight. You know, you get a person who is a person of size, as they say. And you know what? Here's what I hate. I hate someone who complains about their weight as they're shoving pork rinds into their mouth. If you're fine with it and you're just like, you know what? Yeah, I'm a big fat guy. F you. That's, you know what? Okay, fine. More power. Bully for you, sir. More power to you. If you're a smoker or a drinker and you just embrace it, that's great. But Scotty's whole thing of like claiming he wants to quit and then he rejects my help.
Well, and the whole thing, I love smoking. I was absolutely like, woohoo, you know. And then it was like one day I was like, okay, not so much with the coughing up the lung every day.
Yeah.
But, it's my thing. I'm also not the guy. It's like, you know, I don't go around like, you should quit smoking now.
Right.
I also never did the whole like, well, I'm working on it.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. You are either quitting smoking or you are not. There is no try.
You work on things and you work on getting drunk. I mean, those are really the things you work on. You don't work on quitting something.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, sir. All right. Thank you, my friends. We can all agree that Scotty is a puss. He did book Alice Cooper, but he's a puss. We'll come back with Sam, more of your phone calls, Bob Costantini, and more around the corner. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Don't go anywhere. Sorry. That pisses me off.
That's pretty hilarious. That's the way these things always happen.
Kill me.
Which one are you going to pick?
My Chemical Romance. Just because I'm not like the biggest My Chemical Romance fan. Like, there are other records that don't... Like, there are other singles like that... Helena single.
Yeah.
And, I'm not down with their other records. I'm really more of a Black Parade fan than I am a My Chemical Romance fan.
Me too.
So this is clearly the tour to see them on. Because I didn't really like their previous stuff, and who knows, maybe I'll like their stuff, whatever they do next. But this is the record that I want to see them on. But it's the same night as Amon Tobin, mm-hmm. who I've missed. And that guy's come to Portland like twice before, and I've missed him. And so he comes to Portland again at the Doug Furno Less, where you could get me the hookup, and it's the same night as My Chemical Romance. Fantastic. Well done. Thanks, God.
This week is so awesome show-wise, though. Are you doing any shows this week?
No. No, I'm just going to sit at home and sulk. Really?
Uh-huh.
No. I'm just going to sit here and prep for my interview with Alice Cooper. It was just Friday, and so if you all are sick of me talking about it, that's your problem. You just buckle in. It's going to be 4.5 days of me talking. Hey, Scotty, what time are we talking to Alice Cooper on Friday? What time in the program is that? Is that at 2:20? All right, yes. So you all got like a good 96 hours of me talking about Alice Cooper. Really? Is this? I thought it was Noodles today. I thought it was Bob Costantini. Pleased to be explaining now.
What do you think it is?
He says it's Lisa. I haven't picked it up yet. I want to know which sounder to play. And now he's just ignoring me. Oh, okay, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you. Didn't mean to interrupt your precious listener talk. All right, fine. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show a man, a legend, a roaring cavalcade of journalistic excitement, a political thrill ride, Bob Costantini.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Bob. How are you today?
Good. Just to let you know, speaking of music, I've become a in the local Portland scene. Not become a Shins fan.
Oh, really?
Lately,
yeah. You know they are from our fair city.
I believe they live here, don't they?
They do.
They're now, yes.
Yeah, they do. I don't know if they're from Portland or if they just live here now, but
they're from Albuquerque originally.
All right, excellent. And so now, how is it that you came to become a fan of the Shins, my friend?
Well, I saw them on Saturday Night Live, and I really enjoyed it. And I ended up, in a sense, turning my daughter on to them. One of my younger daughters.
You're what they call a cool hunter, then. You're a tastemaker, Bob Costantini.
I try to be.
Are you much of an Alice Cooper fan?
Never that much, really.
Well, that's too bad.
Never that much, sorry.
That's too bad, because for the next few days, whenever you're on, you're going to have to endure me talking about how I'm going to be interviewing Alice Cooper on Friday.
Yes, I'm sure it's very interesting, and always an interesting time, just like talking to you, actually, Rick.
Yes, I'm just saying, there are men, and there are musicians, and there are rock and rollers, and there are legends, and then there are icons, my friend. And Alice Cooper's in that. He's in that last category. We're going to be talking to him Friday. Do you have any questions you'd like me to ask him for you, Bob?
No. I didn't give it that much thought, actually.
Okay, well, if you come up with anything betwixt now and then that you want me to ask Alice Cooper, right, you just say the word, Bob Costantini.
I will.
Okay.
I will.
Hey, I have a question, and this makes me a dumb, ugly American because I don't know the answer to this, but I apologize if this is a thing I have already asked you, because maybe I already have, and I just don't, I haven't committed the answer to memory. We were talking about this Iraq funding bill the other day, and the Democrats are constantly trying to push this rock up the hill, and then Bush, you know, said, well, I'm going to veto it, and whatever. And of course, the sort of crux, the rub seems to be, the point of contention is that the Democrats are attaching this timeline to it, what the Bush administration calls an artificial timetable, which is where the Democrats say, well, look, we'll give you the money, but you got to be out by August 15th of 2009, or whatever the hell it is. And so my question is, when it comes to funding the war, does funding for the war expire and need to be renewed? By which I mean, does Congress actively have to act to fund the war, and they're merely quibbling over what to attach to it? Or if Congress just does nothing, will funding for the war lapse?
If they do nothing, it's generally agreed that eventually the war will run out of money. Because only Congress has the power of the purse. The part of the battle involved here is when the war might start running out of money. The president has said that certain aspects of protecting the troops over there need funding almost immediately, whereas some independent observations and the Democrats say it'll be, you know, at some point this summer that really there could be a money crunch over there. And there's also the possibility, really, that the president can shift emergency funds. He can do emergency spending in this case, the way what happens when the government shutdown occurs and, you know, vital services have to be carried on, even though, you know, your national parks might be closed. There are tricks up the president's sleeve that might be used to continue funding this war. But, you know, once we get into the summer, if no bill is worked out, then we're starting probably into crunch time.
And so,
and you know, obviously, theoretically, if they don't fund anything, yeah, the war runs out of money.
And so my question is, and there's probably no way to know this, but we're going to get into some Mexican standoff at some point where there's Congress saying, well, no more money, and Bush saying, well, I'm not going to bring the troops home. I mean, it seems to me, though, that that's a standoff that the president's, there's no way to win that if you're him, right? Because there's no way. It is inconceivable to me that George Bush, the Bush administration, would leave the troops in Iraq unfunded. There's no way. He'd have to bring them home, it would seem.
Well, and think about this. You'd have to fund some way of bringing them home as well. If they were literally in a way stuck over there, that's hard to imagine that scenario would play itself out. But, you know, the president does have certain abilities and probably things I don't know about or understand as commander-in-chief to move forces around. But, we've never gotten to this kind of thing before, so there is no precedent. We've never had a war that, has been such a subject of a stalemate, a funding stalemate before.
And these are the sort of things, and again, I don't mean to diminish the situation or make light of it or be flip about it, but just like the constitutional crisis in 2000 with the Bush-Gore standoff and the Supreme Court stepping in, I, as just a political observer, you know, there is a certain, you know, it's very compelling when you are in this situation where you are in uncharted waters, so to speak. And the idea that George Bush's resolve is really going to be tested, that when Bush says, well, I refuse to end this early, the idea that Congress might just close up the purse strings and say, okay, fine, and he will then be put, you know, he'll have to put his money where his mouth is pretty, that is a pretty compelling thing, politically speaking.
Well, that is a possible scenario, Rick, and I don't want to downplay it really that much. I don't necessarily think, even at this point, even with this this team of chicken, or let me poke you in the eye while you poke me in the eye, kind of way this is heading. I don't think the Democrats at this point are just ready to say, okay, we're not going to push any bill through, because frankly they already don't have very much of a majority in terms of with the bill that they've just sent or they're about to send to the president
right.
this week, let alone the notion that they would abandon the troops. And you could you could make that case if you were the opposition that the Democrats were abandoning the troops. Of course,
right.
the Democrats are saying the president is
sure.
the one who's not funding the troops. I think you're crazy if you try to predict what will happen.
It's going to be an interesting year, Bob Costantini.
I think it will be.
All right, my friend, enjoy the rest of your day. We will have speaks with you in the immediate future, I'm sure.
Yes, tomorrow afternoon about this time, I think the congressional leaders are going to be having an event to send the bill to the White House.
Ah, excellent. I can't wait to talk about it. All right, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Costantini from the Hill, political whirlwind, and man of the
thing. That went well. That was better than usual.
Okay. That never gets old. Just, that never, ever, ever gets old. You know, because you know what that is with Bob? Scotty says it needs fireworks. Scotty, would you please, if you could just...
Thanks. Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say, except...
You're not going to amount to death squad!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
You know, the thing about Bob Costantini, you know what that is? That's Bob Costantini, and this is a little shout-out to the geeks in the house. He is the Michigan J. Frog of the Rick Emerson Show, you know what I mean? You know the singing, dancing frog in the Warner Brothers cartoons?
Uh-huh.
Where he's the frog that sings and dances until they bring him to the talent agency, and then they open the box, and he does nothing? You know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about.
That's what Bobby, you know, except, ladies and gentlemen, Bob Costantino, you know, the huge overture, and then he just kind of goes, why, hello, Rick, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Sometimes it's awkward, but today I think it was well.
Okay, it's funny to me. By the way, I'd like to give shouts out to my man, Jeff McGinley, and I swear to God, I wasn't.
Pimping. Don't lie.
I really wasn't. I wasn't trolling for somebody to bring me a viso. But, hear that? It's the sound of sweet relief. It's the sound of a viso vigor brought to me by Jeff McGinley. God bless you, Jeff McGinley. God, hold on, do we have a viso live read coming up today?
Yes.
Let me just...
Do you want to do it now?
Let's just do it now. Let me just say, thank you. Listen to this. Oh, that's the sound of the top being popped. I almost don't want to drink it. I almost just want to sit and stare at it.
Will you please just drink it?
I just want to sit and stroke it lovingly. Hold on a second. Oh, that's what I'm talking about right there. This viso is going to help me get through this day. Without it, I think I might have just crumbled into tiny little Rick pieces. Hold on a second.
You're such a junkie.
Because I was asking everybody this morning repeatedly if they had viso, and then
why were they hiding it from you?
Why are you hiding it? I know you've got some. All right. Oh, fantastic. This is organically sweet, of course, means it's got cane sugar in it. No chemicals. No weird junk out of a laboratory. vitamins, minerals, electrolytes. Vigor, which is lemon, lime, and strawberry. It's pretty tart, although on days when maybe, you know, if you want something that's got a little more aggressive taste to it, this is the way to go, definitely. It's actually my preferred flavor right now. I went through kind of a will phase, and I'm in a vigor phase. This one's got caffeine. Vigor and will both have caffeine. Well, it's fantastic. I drink and a vitamin, though. And it's not carbonated either, and it's got the nice, it's kind of like a, you know, the nice kind of wide opening, so you can drink it quickly. I, for example, have now consumed half of this bottle already. Hold on a second. You can find out more at drinkviso.com. God bless you, Jeff McGinley. Thank you, sir. All right, there you go. Hi, Scotty J. How are you?
Doing great.
Hey, I noticed you were having like a 9-hour conversation with one of the callers while we were on the podcast.
Believe it or not, that happens all the time. They're like, hey, I want to tell you this and that. No, I appreciate what everybody says.
You shouldn't engage in long,
I don't want to be rude to people, and I also appreciate what they say.
You ever notice Scotty J just when he's talking doesn't even listen to anyone else talking?
I'm not listening to that because he's talked to me about this before, and I'm not going to be rude and just say, okay, thanks for your input, and just hang up on somebody.
That doesn't sound rude.
No, and I'm just saying you're a busy man. You've got things to do. You're constantly telling me that you're busy. You can't take any more work on. I'm just saying. If someone calls up and they have something to share, you know, you can kind of quickly process their information and we'll speak to them on the air and so forth. I'm just saying, don't feel like you've got to have like a 20-minute conversation with somebody off the air, because that doesn't serve anybody.
Well, this is true, but they were, whatever. They were speaking directly to me.
They can speak. Okay.
It was, they're calling about a different issue,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time,
they're calling about you smoking.
Okay, right. But at the same time, they're saying something
else.
Let's
talk to them here, shall we? Hi, Jeff. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hi.
I was just, you know, encouraging Scotty by example. I smoked for 32 years. I'm 50 years old. And I quit. And I'm glad I did quit. The problem is though, even though I quit smoking cigarettes, I quit drinking caffeine, and all that good stuff, I was diagnosed with what they call level 4 cardiomyopathy, and I have less than 18 months to live, even after going through all the things that I needed to go through to make myself healthy, including losing 160 pounds.
Are you tempted just to start eating and drinking as badly as you possibly can now?
Oh, I had a bacon and egg sandwich for breakfast. It was very liberating.
That's totally what I would do. I would immediately just start smoking crack by the bag. Do you know what I mean? It's just everything. Why not?
I just share information with all my friends, and you know, my friends are happy, and I'm happy. And
yes,
we listen to the Rick Emerson Show, the best show ever. And even though I might be slightly out of your demographic, I ain't never growing up.
Well, God bless you, sir. I don't know. I don't want to be like Johnny Buzzkill about the whole thing, but I mean, I'm sure everybody asked you this, but I mean, so the doctor said, he told you, he's like, you got 18 months, or did he say you got, when did you find this out?
I found out in August of last year.
And so how did he, I mean, do they do it like in the movies where he says, look, there's no easy way to tell you this, so I'm just going to tell you, or do they, I mean, how do they break the news, if I can ask?
Well, we're talking about a certain health maintenance organization that starts with a K and ends with an R and sucks really bad in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you have to go to a specialist outside the system to get any answers.
Well, that's handy.
And so when I went to this doctor, he was a crusty old fart, kind of like the doctor on Battlestar Galactica.
Good reference, sir.
Yes. Most excellent individual, and he sat me down, he looked me straight in the eye, and he says, I'm not going to say my name, sure. But he's going to say, Mr. Jeff, there's no good way to put this, but if we can't find you a transplant in the next 18 to 24 months, you're going to die.
And so when you say a transplant, now you say a cardiomyopathy, what is that? Is that, it's a heart?
Yeah,
cancer,
well,
or
think of your heart as being shaped like an apple, more or less.
Right.
Mine's shaped like a circus balloon animal.
Well, that's no good.
Yeah, it sucks real bad. And, you know, going up and down stairs, laughing at your shows can be quite deleterious to my overall health, but I do it anyway because what the heck, you know.
Oh, thanks.
Show ever.
So every time we're funny, I'm going to, like, be taking minutes off your life.
It's okay. It's worth every minute of it. I love you guys. I have since back in the FMAP days, and used to come to all the listener gigs and everything. I was in radio myself a long time ago, and a very long time ago.
Well,
rooftop radio down in Eugene.
Can I now? Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 50.
50. Well, I mean, it's within.
Oh, that's a demographic.
Yeah, totally. Our demographic is people with taste, sir.
Well, there you go.
So and so you. I mean, have you? I don't know. Have you changed your life in any way? In other words, in addition to the bacon crisp sandwich. I mean, I don't mean to turn this into like some stupid Robin Williams movie, but I mean, do you have like? Well, here's like five things by God that I'm going to do this year or whatever. Or do you not?
No, I like to go to Transamerica, Equifax, and the other credit reporting agencies and stand out in front of the office and flip them the bird. That's fun.
Sir, I wonder. Okay, now here's a morbid thought.
Yeah.
I wonder about this. That if you are diagnosed and the doctor says, look, you got 6 months, a year, 2 years, whatever to live. If you've got a finite sort of end date on things. I wonder if you could just go and just ring up. Because right now, because my wife has good credit, I could run up about $200,000 in credit card debt if I wanted to, like, before the end of the day.
No, I put three kids through college. That's not happening.
The best thing to do is have a good life insurance policy so that'll be paid off and you're not leaving all that debt behind. Because that's just flat-out stealing.
But, I mean, if you don't have...
It is.
What are you, the man? What are you, a cop?
Sort of.
Scotty.
You're not sort of a cop.
Nice guy. I've made arrangements. I don't have any debt to speak of. My car's paid for. I don't own a home. I'm living with family. And
all right.
My kids are all grown in a way. Everybody's cool. I have no angst about this whatsoever. I'm trying, you know, like, to not sound like too much of a country song. You know, I live every day like I'm going to die, you know, which means trying to have... I'm going skydiving when a buddy of mine gets out here from Florida, and we're going to go skydiving, and I got to sign a whole bunch of forms and releases and stuff, but they'll only let me tandem jump. But I've got a list of things to do before I die. And I'm working my way through the things that are realistic, and I'm not worrying about it. The people around me that I love, I don't sweat any of this crap on the news.
If I can, and again, I don't mean to sound morbid, but if I can ask this, now, is this a thing where you will, when it gets down to like the finish line, will you see it or know that it's coming, or could it just you just don't wake up tomorrow?
Typically people with what I have, they go to sleep and they don't wake up one morning.
Edema sets in.
I'm taking a lot of medication. I have a large sack of drugs here.
Oh, I thought you just fallen over there for
no,
a second.
Me too, you freaked me
oh,
out.
Oh God, he's just collapsed on the phone.
No, I'm sitting in a very comfortable chair, but I was just about, I've got these 2 7-day pill sorters and I've got to get that done for the week. It's Monday after all.
Well, if you don't, I mean, it's just, I don't know, and you certainly are not obligated to do this, you don't have to, it's not weird, but, I don't know, drop us a call every now and again, or an email or something, just,
I do, I call and harass you quite regularly, and you've used that special tone you have for when the phone breaks or whatever.
They were losing your call.
Yeah.
All right.
But
just, I
want you to know, Rick, that I love you guys, I really do. You're the best thing on radio in Portland. You do make me laugh every day, and the only concern that I have for you personally is your caffeine intake.
Yeah, well,
you know, that's your bit. It's your bag. It's your life. You own it.
And I'll tell you, and see, now I feel like an ass. Now I can't complain about anything in my life for the rest of the week.
My job is done.
Seriously, wasn't it just earlier today? Wasn't I talking about how there was no Vizo and like I was watching S.H.I.E.L.D. spoilers. I'm like, I wish I was dead. See, now I have to. I can't act like an ass for the rest of the day.
Careful what you wish for.
All right. Well, Jeff, we'll stay in touch, my friend. Let us know how the skydiving goes.
I will, and I am also one of your early adopters of the Magnificent Bastards Club.
God bless you, sir. The Glorious Bastards. Excellent. Excellent. Thank you for doing that. And, again, let us know how it goes. And, yeah, don't be a stranger, my friend. Stay in touch with us.
I will, and you take care. Would you do me a favor and go around the other side of the counter there and give Sarah a big hug for me?
Sure.
Because...
while I'm over there, you're sure it's just a hug, right?
Just a hug. Be nice.
All right. Okay.
Your hands where they belong.
Just asking. All right. I will definitely do it, sir.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Everybody.
All right. There you go. Thank you, Jeff. All right, there you go. That's Jeff.
Now, can you see how a phone call might be longer than you would like it to be as far as
perspective booth? What?
Putting them on hold. Can you see how sometimes they might want to talk?
I mean, it's like either of us have never called screen before.
Seriously, I don't want to be.
If you'd like,
I don't want to be picking a fight about it, but I know because this is an exception. But I know that you engage in long off air conversations with callers.
A lot of times, I'm doing
callers
this.
Who are not dying, by the way. So
okay, well, if you'd like, from now on, I will just flat out go Rick Emerson show.
Don't be an ass. What are you in such a bad mood for?
I'm actually in a good mood. Friday, and you're
not
today.
Guys,
you're pushing us behind. We haven't even gotten to the news hour yet.
Okay. No, I'm in a good mood, actually.
You're not in a good mood.
Great
I'll
mood.
I'll hear that. All right. We got to... Boy, what is it they say in Spinal Tap? That's too much effing perspective. All right. And back after this, Tim Riley around the corner with the AM 970 noon news hour. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. We are back momentarily. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
There's an accident about bees. They finally found some bees. They were tricking them to a place that needed them. And guess what? There's an accident. So two people are in the hospital after the bee vehicle carried 8 colonies of honeybees. I don't know how many that are. Lost part of its load on I-205 around midnight. This is a crash on the Glen Jackson Bridge. Now, the driver behind the truck quickly braked to get around it. But somebody was following too closely and crashed into the bee colonies. So they were injured. 2 vehicles are totaled. And it says here, the bees spilled onto the highway. A professional beekeeper was called in to collect them. Don't ask me who they called to collect bees at midnight.
That's got
to
be a special kind of hell, too, when you smash into a car and you realize you smashed into something that's full of bees.
Mm-hmm. This is, I think bees are this year's, what was it, last year was all alligators, right?
All alligators.
And then the year before that, it was like all sharks. Mm-hmm. This year, it's all bee stories. Well, a Portland police officer at the scene says it looks like a lot of bees were injured. So I don't know, did they rush them to Dove Lewis?
They get a little
for treatment?
Little bee splints. Little bee slings.
Where did they bring injured bees?
I don't know. I would imagine that they just cure that with a shoe. I think that's probably how they... I'm assuming that means their wings or whatever, but I...
Well, they'd need to be x-rayed, I would imagine.
They'd need to be x-rayed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. That's just there's too many. I'm not going to do any more of those. It's just beneath me. It's beneath me. I can't resist. Sometimes they're just there. And so these are. I thought all the bees were dead. I thought they couldn't find any bees.
No, there are a lot of wounded bees.
No. But I mean in general. I thought
dead. Not all the bees died.
Clyde is always yammering about how the bees are all gone.
Oh well, this was a special shipment of bees. This should be investigated to find out where these bees came from in the first place.
The replacement bees. Mm. I call BS on that.
BS.
Yes, making a. Yes, thank you. Yes, we'll make a beeline for that information. I call shenanigans, though, in this whole business of the bees vanishing. I don't think there's any bee vanishing. I think that's just some crap that the media has decided to focus on, like, this week.
Well, it's because there's no Anna story.
Okay, we have to be done. We have to be finished.
See, that's the problem, is you could just go forever with that. It never stops. That's just an ongoing...
Had these been hornets, it would be different.
It's an ongoing blah, 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 it's a honey of a story. Okay, we have to stop now. We have to,
we're done.
Meanwhile, there was another crash over the weekend. A semi hauling wine coolers flipped over 95 near Tooligra Boulevard, shutting down the northbound traffic temporarily and causing congestion for hours.
I didn't even know they sold wine coolers anymore.
It's very 80s and 90s.
I thought those went away with white stretch pants.
Apparently, the driver was from Wyoming, and he's been charged with careless driving, failure to drive in the right lane, and failure to drive in another lane.
So, I guess they cleaned it up. I don't even know. I mean, do they still? I mean, they must still sell them. I thought they'd already just switched to malt liquor. I thought that was the whole thing. I thought if you were... Because wine coolers exist solely to get girls drunk. That's the whole... Here are two reasons for wine coolers. Wine coolers exist, A, to get high school girls drunk when you're a high school boy. That was the only reason anybody I knew ever bought them. And I don't advocate that use, by the way. I'm just saying. When I grew up, those are the only people who found wine coolers. They were teenage boys who would serve them at keggers. And, that, and then if you were just like, if you were like wine coolers were sort of the, they were the training wheels of the drinking set. Like if you were just starting out drinking and you found, you know, like actual liquor to be too harsh and unpalatable, you would just start with wine coolers because they were really sweet. But I think now you just drink Zima or something. I don't really care that much.
Okay. Well, speaking of high school students, a couple dozen Gig Harbor High School students demonstrated outside the school today to protest the use of a surveillance camera that caught two girls kissing.
Bam.
Amber Critchley, a reporter for the school newspaper covering the event, said they're saying the school shouldn't have interfered. The principal says the protest is a disruption, but classes are continuing. He congratulated the students on holding a peaceful demonstration. The students are wearing free love T-shirts and waving peace signs.
I'm unclear about what they're protesting.
Apparently, these girls are being punished for kissing two girls.
Oh, so
they were caught on camera.
So are they protesting the existence of a security camera?
That's
or
correct.
Okay. Well, whatever. I mean, schools are... I mean, wouldn't that thing...
And in part, being punished for being caught on camera kissing.
Well, that's just retarded. That's just... The school would do that. That's just stupid. That's like that stupid story we have three or four times every June about how some hillbilly redneck enclave doesn't want to have, like, two girls as prom king and queen or queen and queen. Or whatever. It's 2007. You got to get past it.
So one girl is no longer at the school. The other remains a student.
Seriously, does it seem like we ought to be past this as a society? The idea that somebody might want to kiss somebody that you don't approve of. The camera thing, though, you just got to sort of be. What was it? The Drudge Report was saying this weekend that there's like one camera for every 14 people in
they
Britain.
They do that story every week. Every time he runs out of things, he does the Britain surveillance camera story.
Big Brother lives in UK. No, it's true. That is one of his go-to stories. Mm-hmm. You're right about that. I hadn't really thought about that. That's a Matt Drudge. That's a recurrent. Mm-hmm. Is what that is. That's a power on his site. All right. Well done. Hey, I saw the best movie this weekend. Speaking of Matt Drudge. Mm-hmm. This made me think. I saw The Sweet Smell of Success with Tony Curtis and Burt Lancaster. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
What? Oh, my God. Really? You got to see that. That is right up your alley. Tony Curtis, Burt Lancaster, some other schmoes whose names I don't know. It's a 1957. It's like a film noir. It takes place in New York City. Burt Lancaster is an all-powerful gossip columnist, kind of like a Walter Winchell, Hedda Hopper type.
Oh, well, that's...
Tony Curtis is a PR agent who is trying to hustle to get his clients mentioned in this sort of New York Post type gossip column that Burt Lancaster runs. And it's like 24 hours in the life of the gossip columnist and the PR agent. And it's just this dark, dark, bleak, noir comedy. 1957. It's called The Sweet Smell of Success. It is fantastic.
So that was the same year Face in the Crowd with Andy Griffith came out.
What a great movie that is.
I've watched it a couple. I love that movie.
The Face in the Crowd, boy, you want to talk about a prescient film, too. Just a film that prefigured network. It prefigured all of the and reality programming of today.
Never mentioned and long forgotten, but that was the first. And the same things happen today.
Absolutely. And I think Face in the Crowd was written by Bud Schoenberg, maybe? The guy who wrote What Makes Sammy Run?
And what's ironic is he plays his country Rube in a sitcom later on in life.
Yep.
And he has America convinced that that is him.
Yep, absolutely. Which is totally. Mm-hmm. I never really thought about that either.
Yeah.
Boy, if you all haven't seen A Face in the Crowd,
plays on TCM every few weeks. Or so.
It is. Yeah, it's a 1957 movie with Andy Griffith. It was written, I believe, by Bud Schoenberg, and I'm pretty sure it was directed by Billy Wilder, who's the guy who later directed The Apartment with Jack Lemmon. I gotta rein myself in, because otherwise now we're going to start linking one movie to another, because I was going to say that I just saw The Apartment not too long ago with, not Reba McEntire, who's Shirley MacLaine. Mm-hmm. Boy, you don't realize how hot Shirley MacLaine was, because you just think of her as a wrinkled old crazy lady who believes in reincarnation. Every time I think of Shirley MacLaine now, she's like Dionne Warwick, and all you think of Dionne Warwick is like her huge teeth and the Psychic Friends Network. Mm-hmm. You think of Shirley MacLaine, you think about how, I just think of her being on Larry King going, and I've lived 75 lives in the past. Would you like to see a picture of my dogs? And she's just hideous. She was just as hot. Let's all say it together now. She was hot as balls back in The Apartment. She was just cute as a button. The cutest thing ever. a blah, 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 blah. So if you all like the movie Network, which I've turned countless people on to with years, or if you saw the Spike Lee movie Bamboozled, they are both direct descendants of this movie called A Face in the Crowd with Andy Griffith, which is a really, really bleak television, a movie about television that came out. Anyway, okay, well, I'm done. Speaking of classic television, we have a Snuff Watch, which has to do with the Tonight Show.
Oh, no, no.
All right. Preparing to be depressed. I don't even know who it is. Tommy Newsom.
No!
Back a band leader for The Tonight Show, whose Mr. Excitement nickname was a running joke for Johnny Carson, has died. He was 78. He died of cancer at his Portsmouth, Virginia home over the weekend. Newsom played the saxophone. He joined The Tonight Show in 1962 and rose from band member to assistant music director. He retired along with Carson with the rest of that Tonight Show band in 1992. The Tonight Show received 5 Emmy Awards during Newsom's years.
Tommy Newsom was the Bob Costantini of The Tonight Show.
That is true.
That's very much the thing. And I never realized until just that moment that the whole shtick I do with Bob Costantini, big overture, and then he's just sort of, well, Rick, I'm glad to be here. Carson did that with Tommy Newsom.
He also, a lot of people didn't know, arranged and composed music for Skitch Henderson, who's one of the,
Skitch Henderson.
Who was the original band leader on The Tonight Show, Woody Herman, Kenny Rogers, John Denver, and others.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'd never heard the name Skitch Henderson until just now, but doesn't Skitch Henderson totally sound like a guy who could only come out of that genre and that era?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to be up there in the role with Cecil Green and Skitch Henderson. I'm going to be at the Catskills. Oh, that's fantastic. Well, that sucks. Tommy Newsom. I remember on those days that Doc Severinsen would be gone, and Tommy Newsom would sit in, and that was the thing. And then Carson would throw to him and say, "Hey, Mr. Excitement, Tommy Newsom." And then Tommy Newsom would just say, "John, how's it going?" And that was his whole thing, was just to be dry and deadpan and whatever. Dad, you know, the weirdest thing is, befitting his persona, I completely forgot he existed until just now when you told me he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
He went away and with that show, and I hadn't thought about him until just now. So, all right. And he died of, what was it? Well, cancer. He was
78.
All right. Let's see. Snuff Watch. All right. There's your Snuff Watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Show. Doc Severinsen dead?
No, he still plays various venues around the country, yeah.
All right. Okay.
And he's got a smaller Tonight Show band that still performs.
I thought you were going to say that he himself was smaller. And I was going to say that didn't really seem, that doesn't seem possible. He's such a diminutive man to begin with. So he's still alive. Ed McMahon still alive.
Yeah.
Everybody else dead.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Fred Cordova. I think he's dead, too.
He's dead.
Yeah. All right. By the way, well, we'll talk to Jeff McGinley more about this later on. We have a whole bank of phone lines here, but Quest, and I'm going to clarify this with Jeff McGinley later on. Quest, apparently, and I know you'll find this hard to believe, Quest came in over the, like, last week, because line one just stopped working last Friday. Apparently, Quest was doing some work, and I swear to God, they just cut the phone cable. You know, like the Manson family did before they killed everybody. Quest came in, and I swear to Christ, they just cut the phone line. So some of our phone lines are working.
So you're saying Jeff McGinley had an awesome weekend?
Yeah, it's his best, and his base day. And the fact that this happened Thursday, it's now Monday, and the phone line still isn't working. Jeff McGinley's continuing to have a good time. Apparently, he called Quest, and they flat out denied it.
Well, it's probably due to the construction and the fact that for some reason they think that people are going to want to ride a train from Washington Square to come to downtown Portland. And they're going to spend millions of dollars doing it.
No, that's not going to happen. Not in any way.
And once you're in the suburbs, you usually stay there. There's a reason why they're built.
So you don't have to be here. All right.
There's no Cheesecake Factory downtown.
Here's Tim Riley.
Okay, so this is, this comes to us from the Sun of London. A male escort told of his horror last night after claiming he was kidnapped by Boy George. 28-year-old Aiden Carlson says it's ironic that his biggest hit was, "Do you really want to hurt me? Because I'm sure he wanted to hurt me. I was convinced I was going to die." This Norwegian spoke out as George, who's 45, looks a great deal older.
Oh, he's only 45?
Well, that's what he claims to be.
How sad.
He was bailed out by detectives probing assault and false imprisonment.
Probing assault?
Carlson said he was grabbed by the singer and another man and chained to a wall after the star invited him to his pad in East London to pose for... You got to be really poor to live in East London.
I was just going to ask, is East London like East Portland?
it's the Gresham of London, basically.
Every time I laugh now, I feel bad that we're taking it. We're
that moving is the that, land of Oliver Twist.
We're moving that Jeff guy one step closer to the grave with every joke we tell. Boy, that's just sad, though.
All right. So the escort fled in his underwear after wrenching the hook from the wall.
Really?
Yeah. He revealed that he met George on the Gaydar website, but only agreed to go to his flat at midnight for an $800 photographic model piece, and not as an escort.
Oh, this is so sad.
Mm-hmm. So he does have $800 to spend, apparently.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's on a card.
So boy George took pictures of him in kinky gear. And Carlson said, George said he was popping out for milk at 5 a.m. I heard him come back. And
he's
I watched
popping out for milk, British slang?
I guess so.
Oh, I see. Going to the store for milk.
At 5 a.m. I heard him come back, and I walked into his bedroom wearing just my white underpants and a T-shirt. I was jumped on by George and another man. George handcuffed me to a hook by the bed and held me down. So apparently he's done this before if he installed a hook there. He said George got rid of the blonde man and produced a box of wisps and sex toys, telling him, now you'll get what you deserve.
This is just horrifying on so many levels.
So this
levels.
Is a box of whips and sex toys.
The idea of boy George telling you now you'll get what you deserve is just creepy beyond words. All right, so let's take this one step at a time.
We're not even done with the story.
Oh, really? Is there more? Okay, go ahead.
Page two. Carlson pulled the hook from the wall and fled, then alerted the police and a nearby news agents at 6:30 a.m. Saturday. Then boy George, whose real name is George O'Dowd, was taken to a police station. Last year, he got community service in New York after he said a rent boy tried to rob him and cops found cocaine in his apartment. He's been unavailable for comment to the stars.
Well, that was going to be my question. Is it like, has he said anything? Like, has he just flat out denied it? So if he hasn't just flat out denied it yet, it seems like there must be some grain of truth there. So did they say who the other guy was? Just some other man?
Doesn't. He just said another man.
Did you have that? What's that line you said earlier? Was it in the same story about the wet underpants? There was some, you had some,
oh, no, in my white, I was just in the bedroom wearing my white underpants and T-shirt.
The idea, okay.
Why was this guy still hanging? Apparently, he thought he was just a model. And $800, I guess, you would hang around. Maybe he wasn't paid yet.
I suppose. I mean, and did he know? I mean, does he say whether he knew it was George? I keep saying George Michael. Does he say whether he knew it was boy George when he went over? If he met him on some website.
It does not specify.
I wonder if the guy was like, hello, this is boy George. Would you like to come over? Or if he was like.
It says he revealed he met George on the Gaydar website.
You wouldn't think of a boy George as having to meet people on a website somewhere, unless he doesn't want them to know that he is a...
Well, like a Clay Aiken type of thing?
Allegedly. As some publications would have us believe. Like a Larry Burkhead kind of a thing. Mm. Who else would... Oh, Lindsay Lohan. She was all over the cover of the Inquirer. She was like making out with some girl. Anyway, so I guess it... I mean, it would seem to me that boy George, even now at this late stage in the game, would have enough fame, because I know he's sort of a prominent club DJ over there. It seems like he would have enough fame that he could just go out and to the best of my knowledge, he's not married, doesn't have a partner, doesn't have a whatever. It seems like he could just go to a club and be like, hey, I'm boy George, why don't you come back and let me put you on a hook? Or whatever it is he's looking for. The weird part to me is not... the business with a hook or the hey-hey or the stand around in your white underpants. I mean, whatever. I don't care. The odd thing is that he would just be meeting some guy on a website and not saying who he is. Or maybe he did. I don't know. So there you go. But the point is that no one is ever clean and sober. No one is ever off of drugs. No one who behaved bizarrely in the past has ever stopped that. They've just stopped getting caught at it. That's the thing. So there you go. So we'll have more on this creepy story as it develops. And it really can't be overstated, by the way, how bad Boy George looks in this photograph. I mean, he just... He really does look like Jackie Coogan with like a sandblasted face. I mean, it's like Jackie Coogan with the skin of Edward James almost wrapped around his head. So there you go. So just suck on that for a while. Here's Tim Riley.
Boy George and Michael Jackson on stage together at last. The producers of a 1980 retro show said they're in discussions with the Carmichaelian and Thriller singers. Talks are ongoing on both nights and try to bring them to the event. This is an organizer for Scotland's 80s Rock Fest. And this was in the Scottish Daily Record.
I had, I don't think I've ever played this tape on the, I don't even know if I have this on tape, actually. I had Boy George on my show one time. This is when I was in Salt Lake City, of all places. Boy George was a guest on my show for, I think, a solid hour. Back when I had no sense of proportion, I used to just, I don't know what the hell I was doing. When I was younger and I was doing this show, I had no sense. Not like I'm the world's greatest interviewer now, but I used to just be the world's worst interviewer, as Bruce Agler would say. That's one of my many, that's one of the many, many things that Bruce Agler, when he was programming this show, improved. He made me a much better interviewer by just telling me over and over again, relentlessly, how badly I sucked and what a terrible interviewer I was and how gut-wrenchingly awful my interviews were to listen to. And I think after the 400th or 500th time that he said that to me, I decided to fix it. But my interviews used to be awful, especially because there's this cardinal rule in radio where if you're going to do an interview with somebody, you book them for a small period of time. And then if the interview goes well, you can always extend it. In other words, you book somebody for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and if the interview goes well, you can always say, well, look, what, can you hang around for another segment? Or, can you stick around and do another 10, 12 minutes with us? Whereas if you book somebody for, and this is what I've talked to Scotty about, if you book somebody for half an hour and they suck, like 5 minutes in, if they just blow, then you're just screwed because you're looking at the clock realizing you've got another 25 minutes with some stiff, with just some hideous guest. This is a lesson that I did not learn until late in my career. And so I used to book people for interviews and, of course, not realizing that most people who come in for an interview, they got something to whore. They just got something they want to shill or pimp. And so they would offer me just some guest. Hey, do you want to interview, Boy George? Sure. Well, how long do you want him in for? I don't know, the whole show? Why would I want Boy George in the studio for the whole show? Seriously. I mean, what?
It's not that he's Jim Roop.
Seriously. I mean, like, what logic? I think I had Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker of Star Wars fame. I'm pretty sure that I had Mark Hamill on the show for 2.5 hours on the phone when I was like in like 1994 or some crap. You know, I was like 20 years old. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I'm pretty sure that he was pimping this comic book called The Black Pearl, which is a comic, and let's be honest, no one cares about a comic book that Mark Hamill has written. Who cares about that? No one. Mark Hamill and his accountant, that's who cares about The Black Pearl. We all just wanted to ask him Star Wars questions. Remember when you were Luke Skywalker? It was awesome, you know? But I think the deal was that, like, I let him talk about, I swear to Christ, I can't even imagine how excruciating this was to listen to. I feel so bad for all my listeners. I want to go back and apologize to all of them one by one, my listeners from 15 years ago. I think I let Mark Hamill talk about this Black Pearl comic book for 90 minutes. Because at the end, then I knew I could ask him a solid hour of Star Wars questions. At least I had Star Wars questions to ask him. What was I thinking having Boy George in the studio for an hour? I don't even like the Culture Club. What was I going to ask him? I think I took it as some affirmation of the show's greatness that Boy George would sit in the studio with me. This, by the way, is like a good 8, 9, 10 years after people quit caring about him. But I'm like, oh, Boy George will sit in the studio with me for an hour? What an honor. How can I say no? And so Boy George sat there, looking pasty and fat, wearing a Kangol hat, refusing to let us take his picture because he wasn't in makeup. He just sat in the studio with me for an hour doing nothing much at all. I have no idea.
That sounds like hell.
Why did I think that was a good idea? I don't even think I've got it on tape. I don't think I have it on tape anywhere. It's just a waste of airtime is what that was. Well, in any event. Well, whatever. Here's Tim Riley.
Young whale writer star Keisha Castle-Hughes is now a mother, and she's 17 years old. She tells People magazine that Castle Hughes and her 20-year-old boyfriend of 3 years, so they've been going together since she's been 14, apparently, welcomed the baby girl last week. Felicity, Amor, weighed 7 pounds, 6 ounces. Castle Hughes, an Australian native, became the youngest Best Actor Oscar nominee in Hollywood history. But at the age of 13, she was recognized for a role in 2002's Whale Rider. Most recently, she starred in Mary in the 2006 Nativity story and The Queen of Naboo in 2005 Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, that's right. She was the, yeah, she played Mary in the Nativity film, which was all awkward because they had to screen it for the Pope and she's all knocked up and unmarried. Yeah, in your face, Pope.
And she is in real life.
Fantastic. Well, she's a method actress. All right.
Meanwhile, getting back to some of these other things that are going on, George Tenet spoke on 60 Minutes last night because a new book comes out today. So I'll rush out to the store and get it. He reflects on some of the challenges that made preventing the terrorist attacks of 9/11 difficult. He tells 60 Minutes, while he feels some responsibility about the tragedy, there are plenty of people in the U.S. government who should feel they let down America.
I still lie awake at night thinking about everything that could have been done that wasn't done to stop 9/11 for the 9/11 families. I said, you deserve better from your entire government, all of us.
He describes the impact 9/11 had on the CIA.
There was nobody else in this government that felt what we felt before or after 9/11. Of course, after 9/11, everybody had that feeling. Nobody felt like we felt on that day. This was personal.
He warned Condoleezza Rice, the National Security Advisor, in the summer of 2001 that a terrorist attack within the U.S. was imminent.
We need to consider immediate action inside Afghanistan now. We need to move to the offensive.
So then he spoke on the Today Show today, and he said the CIA realized after the fact that much of their information wasn't accurate.
Much of what we gave the secretary to say had turned out not to be accurate, and I'll say it's an awful thing to reflect on. Secretary of State represents the United States of America, and we did not help him, and we did not help ourselves.
And George was talking about what? 9/11?
Yeah, 9/11.
All right.
The Center of the Storm, it's called. It hit store shelves today.
All right.
He said there were some in government in July of 2001 who ignored the signs of an imminent attack, but he chose to stay to try and change their view.
I chose to do my job in a way where you stay inside the system, you do your best, you push your objective analysis, you make people aware of what you believe to be true. I certainly wasn't silent within the purview of my job and in the councils of the administration in terms of what we said and how we said.
Well, what a gripping interview this sounds like. Remind me to go home and watch that 500 or 600 times. And that Carl Bernstein book on Hillary Clinton comes out. I think it's either this week or next week, though.
Oh, okay. Let's
read that as soon as I'm done with my Alice Cooper golfing book. Rick, our phone line cut last Monday. We didn't get service back until late Thursday. Nothing like providing county services with no phone, no fax. Good luck on a speedy recovery. Yeah, this is last Thursday, I believe, that Quest, and this is Jeff McGinley's terminology, I don't really know. He says that literally Quest just cut our phone line. So we have now, and the worst part is, it cut our phone line, but it didn't entirely disconnect it, by which I mean that if you were calling into the studio, from your end, if you were calling in, it would just ring and ring and ring and ring, but the light would never blink here, so we weren't able to actually answer it. It wouldn't even just roll over to the next line. It would just sort of ring endlessly. So they've assured us that they'll get to it sometime between, you know, today at 9 a.m. and Thursday at 6 in the evening. So thanks for that. I like it in the view of some utility companies, like you have nothing better to do but to sit around and, well, let's see, we're going to be there to hook up your cable. Can you be there sometime between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m.? We'll try to be there sometime in that window. Really? Thanks. Thanks for that.
And they'll get there at 3:59.
Oh, it's 3:59, and then realize they've forgotten their lug wrench or whatever. I got to go home. Maybe I'll just start saying that I'm going to do the radio show sometime between 6 a.m. and midnight, huh? And I'll just show up, and I'll do it at 4 hours. Maybe not even 4 hours in a row. Maybe I'll do like an hour at 7 a.m., and then like 2 hours in the afternoon, and then four increments of 15 minutes each later on in the evening. Huh? Jesus. All right. Jesus Christ, is it 12:38?
It's 12:37.
It's 12:37. All right, back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970 coming up later on.
I don't know. I have no idea. Oh, here it is. Jim Roop. Everyone will say. Even with the Viso. Coming up later on, CNN Radio correspondent Jim Roop, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian as well, and counting down to Friday's interview with Alice Cooper, which is really the only thing that matters this week. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Jim Riley.
Joe Lieberman, who we haven't heard from lately, is back on the scene to make some more inane comments. He calls the ongoing dispute between the Democratic-controlled Congress and the president a meaningless political debate. Senator Lieberman says Congress has shown it doesn't have enough support to override the president's veto on the funding bill that includes a deadline for troop withdrawal.
I think those who opposed the war, who wanted to adopt deadlines for the beginning of a withdrawal of our troops, have made their point. The president's obviously going to veto the bill, and there are not enough votes to override the veto.
Right, Leela, Robert.
More time, says Lieberman. We need to give them more time in Iraq.
Got a new general, Petraeus, a new strategy, new troops. It's showing some signs of success, but it's very early. We only have about three of the five units, the major units that will be part of this.
Why do I get the feeling he's speaking in a small room covered with fake wood paneling and like a card table somewhere in the middle?
And the batteries are dying.
Exactly.
Well, the classic film Dirty Dancing wants you to have the time of your life all over again. In celebration of its 20th anniversary, the movie is being re-released in about 300 U.S. and Canadian theaters for two nights only. The screenings are going to be tomorrow and Wednesday night at 7:30. Tickets are available at participating box offices and online at fathomevents.com.
All right, let's settle this once and for all. Is it nobody puts baby in a corner or nobody puts baby in the corner?
A corner.
Discuss. Really?
Mm-hmm.
You sure about that?
I would say I'm about 80% sure.
A corner or the corner? You say it's a corner.
Yes.
All right. Tim Riley, does the news department have an opinion on how that line is said in the film?
Nobody. It doesn't comment on pop culture.
Okay. The only reason I say it's the corner is because there's that Fall Out Boy song. And yes, I'm embarrassed
that
I know.
A corner.
That. According to whom? How did you determine that?
According to IMDb.
But that's all user entered information. That could be wrong. That's all information entered by the people. Because isn't that Fall Out Boy song called Nobody Puts Baby in the Corner? And it seems like that's a detail they wouldn't get wrong.
I don't know, Rick.
I'm just saying it's a thing that bugs me. Here's another thing that bugs me.
No, the only thing that's coming up for Nobody Puts Baby in the Corner is the Fall Out Boy song, which you should be ashamed.
Now, are you...
And Dirty Dancing?
Are you doing it via Google?
Yes.
All right. Well, somebody will let us know. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, this is supposed to be a big story. Nobody seems to care about this D.C. madam charged with running an upscale prostitution ring in the nation's capital. And let's see. Her name is Jean Palfrey. She says Randall Tobias, the former head of Eli Lilly and Company, who resigned from his post, admitting to using her services.
Friday's admission by Mr. Tobias that he engaged in legal activity while a customer of my firm supports my position all along that I operated a sexual, albeit legal, business for 13 years.
I'm tired of these people.
A customer of your firm, what? Which people?
Well, all these madams coming forward. That's not a big story. I mean, how many?
I think
they know from the start it's going to end up this way.
I think CBS Radio needs to start using the phrase "these people" more often to refer to groups of society.
Yeah.
I think we've got to start. We've got to vow right now to start saying "you people" and "those people" at least twice a day to refer to huge swaths of America. Now, is she the same madam? That is
confusing her with the Hollywood madam. This is the DC madam. It's a franchise.
Pretty soon there'll be an Akron madam and yes. A Pocatello madam. So, first of all, Randall Tobias, doesn't he just sound like a guy who'd be wearing an ascot?
Uh-huh.
Secondly, so is she the one was the Hollywood madam the one who was in the news a couple weeks ago?
Was she in the news? I don't pay attention to all these madams. I can't keep them all straight.
Who is the one that's...
This is an East Coast D.C. madam.
Who is the one that's threatening to release the names during Sweeps Week on ABC?
That's the D.C. madam.
That's the one we're talking about right now. Mm-hmm. All right, okay. Well, you're right. I mean, it's, you know, you start... Look, if you start hooking for a living...
She has to sell phone records to ABC News to pay for a legal defense.
That's wrong. Whatever happened to the code of ethics? Whatever happened to the code of silence?
Absolutely.
Whatever happened to honor, to principle? You didn't see Sidney Biddle Barrows turning over the name of her clients?
No.
There's no respect left in this world. All right, it's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, White House spokesman Tony Snow is back on the job after cancer surgery. He was applauded as he entered the press briefing room this morning for his morning constitution.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back.
Keep on back the tears.
Anybody who does not believe that thoughts and prayers make a difference, they're just wrong.
I'm sure that the administration will get right on that health care plan now.
The head of the British Army says Prince Harry will be deployed to Iraq with his regiment. According to the BBC, the final decision was made by General Sir Richard Donut. But he stressed the issue is
Sir Richard Donut.
Mm-hmm. Donut called for an end to the frenzied media speculation around this issue. In the interest of all our people deployed in Iraq at this time.
Meatwad was not available for comment.
It was back in February when British officials confirmed that Harry would be sent to Iraq and that he was going to take on a normal troop commander's role rather than a desk job. However, there's been growing concern about his safety and that of his soldiers after 11 U.S. UK troops were killed earlier this month. That's that.
All right. See, I'm looking at it right now. Let's see. The first result is nobody puts baby in the corner. Now we have baby. Nobody puts baby in a corner. Nobody puts baby. And these are not Fallout Boy results, by the way. Nobody puts baby in the corner. Nobody really seems to know. There seems to be there's no unanimity here. Let's see. Nobody,
it's a corner.
Nobody puts baby in the corner.
He's talking about all corners. All corners of baby's life.
Nobody puts baby in any corner anywhere.
Yes.
Anywhere in the world.
It's true.
He's not speaking about the corner as sort of like a Zen sort of a, you know, the corner that's everywhere. The corner that is waiting for you everywhere in life. Why am I wasting time? I mean, seriously, this whole conversation is going to put me like a few minutes closer to death. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, we have to talk about that that virgin in San Francisco that turned to jelly because it got too hot.
Was that on the front page of the Oregonian today?
Yeah, it was.
How bizarre that the Bay Area traffic would be in the front page of the Oregonian.
Yeah.
All right.
Governor Schwarzenegger has declared a state of emergency after yesterday's early morning freeway crash near the Bay Bridge. The governor toured the collapsed interchange, saying the timing for the accident was fortunate.
If that accident would have taken place at rush hour, I think that many, many people would have lost their lives and a lot of people would have been injured. So it was a disaster, but it was a blessing that it came with that.
So I'm unclear about
in the middle of the night.
What is it exactly that happened?
So there's this... Let's see. 8,600 gallons of fuel catch fire, explode, melting the connector because the river used on the bridge can take temperatures up to 1,000 degrees. However, it got up to 2,000 degrees and just melted the bridge.
Was this on the news?
I'm sure it was, yes, if you watched the news over the weekend.
This is what I get for not watching network news.
You can't force you to watch the news. I mean, you're not on the clock.
Rick, we can't force you to be informed. We can't force you to pay attention to the world around you.
Mm-hmm.
I was too busy watching Bootleg Shield episodes off BitTorrent.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
This is a place for that.
Okay. Well, as long as you're here to keep me informed, I guess. All right. And so the bridge collapsed?
Yeah, it kind of melted.
Jesus.
So motorists were scrambled to find alternative routes to work after that highway collapsed. Governor Schwarzenegger said the work is underway to repair the damage.
I wanted to come here to make sure that we all work together as quickly as possible in order to rebuild this intersection here and this interchange as quickly as possible. We want to create the actions right away.
Well, all right, there you go. Hey, what was the full name of that general, that British general you were just we were just quoting?
Donuts?
What was his first name?
Let me look here.
Is it possible that his first name was Dick?
General Sir Richard Donut.
General Dick Donut, really?
Mm-hmm.
That is the best name ever.
Pardon me, General Dick Donut? Fantastic. I am General Dick Donut. Gary, you're on the Rich Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. Long time, no time.
Thank you, sir.
And hello, Sarah. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
Hi. Hey, regarding the great Alice Cooper coming in Friday, I was hoping maybe you could rally him to get some kind of radio station in Portland to carry his radio show.
He does do a radio program. It's called Alice Cooper, Night something?
Nights with Alice Cooper.
Nights with Alice Cooper.
If you and Laura can ever get the time to blast out real quick on a weekday and go down to Seaside Cannon Beach and listen to 102.3 KCRX, Seaside Cannon Beach, you know, classic rock for the coast, and they carry a show every night there. It's outstanding.
I hate the beach. It's full of seagull droppings. They don't show you that in the tourist photos.
Sand.
Oh,
and sand is filthy. And you're at any moment, you're about 5 seconds away from being crushed by a log.
Mm-hmm. Hey, can I say one thing in closing real quick on a different subject, very quick?
Sure, why not?
Good riddance to Max 910 Talk Radio for Guys.
That happened quite a long time ago.
Yeah, really? Where have you been?
Well, I've been a follower for a long time, bro. I've been listening to you like KOTK days and
yes,
long time before. And but if ever I had contempt for a radio station, that one just had to go.
You know, a lot of people actively hated Max 910. I will say that, and it wasn't really that they hated us. I mean, I suppose the same group of people hated us.
They hated it so much they no longer require it to be in English.
there were people who have, you know, not everybody likes every show, and not every, you know, there's people who like us, but they don't like, whatever, Don and Mike, or people who listen to Like Us, but not us, or, see, Gaunt, yeah, there you go. Thanks. All right. You know, people who like us, but they don't like Dennis Miller, whatever. There were a lot of people who actively just hated that whole station, Max 910. They just loathed it with everything.
I hated it. That, oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't even express how much I disliked it.
Well,
I can't express getting up at 3:30 in the morning.
Tim, we want you to do news during Imus.
Why?
Well, well, would you rather that I was on during Like As People Listen? No, Tim.
We don't want to hear you coming in.
People can't wait to hear you at 5:30 in the morning. Scotty knows that he hates it and he never listened to it. That is, it really is just, you know, it just left a foul taint on everything. Max 910 was just, it was like a meal made with rancid garlic, you know? Just sort of put a bad smell on everything it touched. All right, fantastic. Well, see, now Tim Riley has heard from this program all the way through 7 o'clock. 4, 5, 6, and 7. Back in Tom Likas, right where the Tim Riley news belongs.
Oh, I was trying to figure out what you're talking about for a minute. I forgot I do that, don't I?
Yes. Yes, you do, Tim.
When did that begin? I've been doing it for about 3 weeks.
Is everybody in a little bit of a fog today?
I don't know what the problem is. I just can't catch on to what's going on around me for some reason.
Somebody asked, and I don't mean to make you self-conscious. This email says, Tim Riley seems lethargic today. And then he continues, please excuse him so he can do a line of blow. So, you know, I'll get that taken care of for you, Tim. Sarah didn't sleep well last night. I slept terribly last night.
I've heard from a couple friends, and they didn't sleep well last night either.
Yeah, Tim does seem, you do seem maybe a little, just a tiniest bit fuzzy around the edges today.
I don't know what it's about.
Scotty's just plain pissy. Let's just call that what it is. He just seems pissed off for some reason. I don't know why. So it's just a... It's just a fantastic day all the way around.
Well, at least the classic comedy WKRP in Cincinnati has been released on DVD, and I saw it yesterday at Target. At
really?
Sport. $32. The 3-disc set features all 22 season 1 episodes, plus new audio commentary from the show's creator and cast. Former star Tim Reed, who played the evening DJ Venus Flytrap, said the DVD will hopefully bring in a new group of fans.
This generation that probably will be seeing it now is a generation that grew up watching me on Sister Sister, so this is another view of what television was like long before they were born. I mean, you got to realize that we did the pilot for this show 30 years ago.
I grew up watching him on Sister Sister. I have no idea what that is.
I don't know what that is.
All I know Frank Reed from, or Tim Reed. Tim Reed or Frank Reed?
Tim Reed.
Tim Reed.
Frank was the other... Frank Bonner was the salesman.
Frank Bonner played Herb Tarlick. Mm-hmm. So Tim Reed was Venus Flytrap, and then, of course, my generation will know him not only from Venus Flytrap, but also from Frank's. That's why I wanted to call him Frank Reed, from Frank's Place. The fantastic but prematurely canceled. But Frank's Place is one of those shows that TV critics and people like myself always have to mention when they list off prematurely and unfairly canceled programs. You'll put it right next to Cupid and Futurama and Sports Night and Frank's Place, which I think only ran for like 4 episodes, which was a sort of dramedy before that term was invented. It was sort of a half-hour comedy drama set in New Orleans, I believe. And it was Tim Reed who inherited a Creole restaurant from his family. He, of course, was from New York and blah, blah, blah. It was like a fish out of water kind of a thing. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. So WKRP, though, is where, I mean, that show kind of typecast. I don't think anybody on WKRP went on to do anything notable after that.
Gordon Jump became the main tag repairman.
That's true.
Oh, and also there was that terrible syndicated WKRP in Cincinnati.
Oh, boy, that was awful. Did you ever watch that?
No, because I put it in the same categories. She's the sheriff. to one of those shows.
Who says that the news department can't weigh in with pop culture references? I had no idea. See, I totally thought you were going to lump that in with After MASH. That's how I thought you were going.
That didn't last long enough.
No, I thought you were going to. I thought you were totally going to make the. I lumped that in with After MASH, which is what I would have done. But then you went a totally different way. She's the sheriff. Well done.
Could see Ellen Hemmel begging for that behind closed doors.
Look, Suzanne Woolworth, you're wild. She's the sheriff. What an awful program that was. Bad sets that looked like they were from a high school production of Grease. Just terrible, like bad, like terrible, like paper mache sets. Then there was that, and then Gordon Jump was on that episode of Different Strokes where he tried to molest Arnold's friend Dudley. It's true, and as they always phrased it in the 80s, and then he tried to touch me. It was never molest. They never said the word molest. It was always touch. Joni DeRoshi and some friends were having dinner the other day, and they were doing this total, like it was like right out of a Douglas Copeland novel. I think they were sitting around the table actually trying to list off all of the very special episodes of sitcoms that they could remember. And the one that everybody came up with was a Different Strokes where Gordon Jump, who was a cameraman, I think he worked at like a camera store. And it was like a whole lot of, why don't you come in the back and see the dark room with me, boys? And then he just drops his pants, tries to get it on with Dudley. So there you go. All right. Do we have more WKRP cuts?
Oh, no, that's enough for now. Maybe some later.
All right.
He really didn't have that much to say.
So, well, he's probably tired of being asked about it anyway. He's probably just, yes, I did a show 30 years ago. I mean, that's got to be just kind of a living hell. And when you're one of those guys that does, I mean, rare is the man like Shatner who can take just that tiny little slice of fame and just leverage his entire career off it successfully. Because usually you just end up like Jim Backus or somebody. He's just walking around angry and drunk and embittered all the time. Just embittered and poor. Especially back in that era when those guys, the contracts they signed. They didn't get any syndication money. I mean, do you realize those poor bastards on Gilligan's Island didn't get any money from all the time that I was in rewrite? It's on right now somewhere. Somewhere right now, there is a television broadcasting Gilligan's Island. And like, what's her name? Like Tina Louise is getting nothing from it. She's getting nothing from that show. So, but everybody else is dead. Is everybody on Gilligan's Island dead except for Tina Louise and Don Wells?
Yes, I believe so.
It's going to be sad when Don Wells dies. It's the hottest. She was
so... It'll be a national tragedy.
It really will be. No, because look, all men know that she was the hotter of the two. And I know that's well-traveled talk radio territory, so I'm not going to sit and go over it again. But that's one of those things. We've made the point. That's one of those pop culture references that is like... That jersey is hanging in the talk radio auditorium. We no longer actually have that discussion. It's just been done to death about Ginger versus Marianne. That was done to death by about 10 years ago. I was in the first wave. I was there. I was there when it happened.
That was that one promo that ran for like 3 years in a row, every commercial break.
On KOTK? Mm-hmm. Back when I had the high, like, the high adenoidal voice. Let me talk about Mary Ann versus Ginger. I'm Rick Emerson. I'm 12. I need more coffee. So I was there in the first wave of that conversation back in 1994 when that first began. But Don Wells was just, she falls into that category, like we were talking about this last week, like Shirley MacLaine, for one thing, and Barbara Feldon, just unbelievably scorchingly hot.
We already did Barbara Feldon last week.
Yes, because but I've never seen that thing of her on the leopard skin rug, ever. Anyway, well, you know who hasn't aged well, though, is Tina Louise, who played Ginger on Gilligan's Island. And just what a terrible, what an awful person she seems to be, too. Every interview I've ever seen with her, where she demanded, like, she didn't want anything to do with any of the revivals of that show. I don't think she was in any of the made-for-TV movies. I don't think she was in the Harlem Globetrotters.
It's almost as if she wasn't acting for the part, that was really her. She really thought that that's who she was.
So she really was Ginger. Yeah. What was her last name?
I don't remember. I don't think Ginger had a last name.
No, I think they all had last names.
We're going to have to play that old promo again. It's probably on there.
I have to phone my 1995 self. That should totally be a bit where Rick Emerson 2007 calls Rick Emerson from like 1997. This is Rick Emerson 2007. What do you want? I need to know Ginger's last name from Gilligan's Island. They all have last names because the skipper was
Raven Shore.
No, but his last name. But the skipper's name was Jonas Grumby. That was the skipper's name on Gilligan's Island, and then.
Gilligan, God, I used to know Gilligan's last name, too. No, his name was Willie Gilligan. Gilligan was his last name. I can't believe I'm doing this. It's like I'm becoming a parody of myself right as I speak here. I'm sitting here listing the full names of the Gilligan's Island characters.
What about Mr. and Mrs. Howell? What was their last name?
Well, their names were Howell, but her name was Lovie Wentworth Howell. Really, if I had to do like a Mad Magazine, like an Onion parody of myself, it would be this segment right here.
So if they were only going away for a three-hour tour, why did they bring all that china and fur coats with them?
And we're done. All right, we should take a break here. We'll come back. Jim Roop around the corner. Let's see. We got the phone calls here. So forth. More from Tim Riley later on. Peter Carlin. Top five. Our search for the second worst story ever. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.
Half the squares.
I'll never pick up on it. And Julian had made a drawing, and he said, look, it's Lucy in the sky with diamonds. It was all a coincidence. Why, hello, it's a Rick Emerson radio program. Oh, I can feel that Vizo kicking in. I'm a little bit jittery now. All right.
How long before the 20th anniversary of the release of She's the Sheriff?
Right, really?
It came out in 1987.
87? Really?
It was nominated for some award.
No, it wasn't. That's like, was it nominated for a Razzie?
It was nominated for Young Artist Award for Taliesin Jaffe for Best Young Actor starring in a comedy series.
I swear to God, I feel like I'm in some weird fever dream today. None of this makes any sense. Are we really talking about
user comments? Awful. More.
Oh, this
show is awful. Awful in a way that can't be described.
You're
not as boring as NBC's Wings, but awful in every way.
Wings.
The plot is that when a sheriff dies, his wife takes his place instead of the deputy sheriff. The sheriff tries to be feminist without being annoying, but only succeeds in being feminist without logic. Why couldn't a woman,
isn't that redundant?
Be a sheriff in the first place? But no, she has to be a wife who suddenly became a sheriff and gets into wacky situations.
I like the idea that somehow the show tries to be feminist without being all, you know, annoying and whatnot. I like the idea that somehow, you really have to work at it. Let's see. All right.
Starring Ernie Sabala as Dickie Dinsmore.
I swear to God, I don't understand what's going on today. This is great. This really, I sense, I can't really tell, but I sense today's program is wonderful. I can't really tell, though, because I'm all fuzzy around the brain. I sense it's a great show today, but I can't tell. Are we really talking about user reviews of She's the Sheriff with Suzanne Summers,
mm-hmm.
starring somebody as Dickie Dinsmore?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Let's see. Rick, you've forgotten about Howard Hessman. He was the teacher and head of the class. He's also an Oregonian. I did know that. But I didn't know this. She's the Sheriff was set in what town? I don't even know this is a real town. Winston, Oregon.
Oh, I don't know. Man.
Is Winston, Oregon a real place?
I don't know.
All right. We'll get Jim Roop here in just a second, and then we'll have more of your calls about She's the Sheriff, starring Suzanne Summers. And by the way, I'd like to point out that Sarah's getting kind of pissed off about the nobody puts baby in the corner thing. Here's the thing, and it's not so much that you're getting pissed off, it's that you won't admit that you're getting pissed off. I can tell.
I just can't find it anywhere,
and I've seen it
like 200 times.
And you're sure that it's nobody puts baby in a corner?
Yes.
See, and here's the thing. I can tell that you're kind of angry about it.
But now I'm kind of angry because what if I'm wrong? What if I've thought this whole time that it's a corner and it's a the corner?
Yeah, see, and I can tell it's one of those days when you are sort of disproportionately angry about something that's just retarded. And don't get me wrong, I'm the king of that. But Sarah's over there angrily pounding at the keyboard. God damn it. And I'm like, what? She's like, I can't find a YouTube clip. It's stupid, dirty dancing. Because there's this whole debate about, is it nobody puts baby in the corner or nobody puts baby in a corner? And you are just, I can tell now, because I know this tendency, because it happened, because I do the same thing. I can read you like I can read myself sometimes. Because we are very similar in many ways. I can tell you have a lot of personal investment now in being right about this totally stupid and irrelevant dirty dancing disagreement that we're having. And that is this whole show in a nutshell. That Sarah and I are on the precipice of having a screaming match about a line in Dirty
you
Dancing.
You and I are?
I can just tell. No, I'm just saying. I can tell that you are just...
It's amazing how everyone around you is in a bad mood. Your problem.
I'm not saying that you're in a bad mood. I said the whole show is kind of weird, but this is the whole show in a nutshell. That I can tell you're getting kind of disproportionately irritated that you can't find proof about a particular line in Dirty Dancing.
That's what makes this show great and awful all at once. All right, well, we got more on the way, more phone calls, Chip Riley, et cetera. Let's welcome out of the Rick Emerson Show. From Los Angeles. Jim Roof!
Hello, sir.
How you doing, brother?
I'm groovy, man.
Are you a Dirty Dancing fan?
You know, I think it's a corner. Because isn't her nickname Baby?
Yeah, but there's some debate about whether he says nobody puts Baby in a corner or nobody puts Baby in the corner.
I think it's
Now, that's
as if backing you in a corner like a rat kind of thing.
See, Sarah makes that claim too, but sadly she can't find any proof. Sadly, it's only her, it's just conjecture. She can find no evidence.
It's well, if she's wrong, if she's wrong.
Now, I'll remind her about it every day for the rest of the week. If she's wrong, I will hold it over her head, and I will mention it to people I don't even know. What's that?
I think she's right.
Probably. The secret is I don't really care all that much. But see, now it's like I have to stake out the contrary claim. I have to stake out the contrary position. It's just it's my role. It's my role as the avocatus diabolus, as they used to say in Rome. All right.
Avocatus smashing
it. That is the I don't even know what we're talking. Oh, well, first of all, let's talk about this highway. This is what happens when I go for a couple days without watching the news. I mean, this was on the front page of the Oregonian, so, I mean, this sucks, right? This sucks for you guys. This, I mean...
Well, not for me, for the folks in the Bay Area.
But, I mean, traffic in the Bay Area is, like, the worst thing ever anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, is that... I wonder, scientifically speaking, if that is the worst traffic in the country. I mean, if there's some way to measure that.
It might be, because that's that interchange that dumps everything off into several freeways from the San Francisco Bay Area Bridge, the Bay Bridge, rather. I mean, that's between Oakland and San Francisco. That's that terrible bottleneck of crap that happens every day from 6 a.m. until, you know, 10 p.m. every day.
I mean, and under the best of circumstances,
traffic
in that part of the world is just bad, bad. I remember actually just driving, you know, you drive past San Francisco, and you have to try to make sure that you're not doing it at certain times of day, because it just snakes out in every direction, and everything just comes to a standstill. It's just solidified.
And it's if the traffic lanes and the signals, it's all aesthetics. It doesn't mean anything, because people just get where they have to go the best way they can there.
Yep.
They have to ignore all laws and all lines.
It's true.
They have to.
It's true, because if you follow it, because you're never going to get anywhere otherwise.
Uh-huh.
So is there any kind of a time frame about how long it's going to take them to get up this back where it was before it all caught fire and collapsed?
They tell us 60 days.
Yeah.
While that may seem strange because the retrofit since the 89 earthquake is still going on, but they did fix the Santa Monica Freeway, if you remember. That went foobar during that earthquake, the 94 earthquake.
Yeah,
they fixed
that
junior up in about a month.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, for good or bad, California's got a lot of practice at repairing collapsed sections of freeway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You ought to be really good at it by now.
It sucks for the commuters, but it's pretty good for a contractor who gets that gig.
Well, and this is something they couldn't have anticipated, to be fair. I don't think they could have predicted this problem, that the freeway would get up to 2,000 degrees or whatever it was, and it would just melt all of the rivets. I mean, I'm not really sure anybody could see that coming.
No. No, you're right. I mean, and even talking with safety experts this morning, they say, look, nothing's foolproof.
Yeah.
And when something like that happens, you know, you're just lucky no one was killed or hurt.
When you're driving in Los Angeles, because I do this here, even though it's pretty much earthquake, you know, there's not a lot of earthquakes that happen in this part of the country. When you're driving and you're in traffic and the traffic comes to a stop and you are stopped underneath an overpass, do you start running through your head?
Like, every time.
I do that too, man. Every time I'm underneath a train trestle and anything, I start thinking, well, if that 6.0 comes along right now, I'm pretty much hosed.
Yep. I really try and snake my way. If I see traffic coming to a halt, I'll let people honk at me till Christmas. I'm not getting underneath that underpass if I don't have to.
No, man, I knew a guy, this was years ago, a guy, and I think it was in like Michigan or someplace. Anyway, he was driving along, and there was some sort of earthquake or something happened. Something bad happened. There was a train trestle, it was a train overpass above where he was driving. And there was some sort of horrible what's it with the train. And one of the train cars actually rolled sideways off the overpass, landed on the freeway. I mean, it fell, whatever, 60 feet, and landed on the car in front of him.
Mm-mm-mm.
And he's like, you know, he said, he's like, I didn't sleep right for about 6 months.
Yeah.
It's like, that'll make you think twice about ever getting in a car again ever. He's like, you really don't realize how close you come all the time just to dying in some horrific fashion.
Well, you maybe remember about a year and a half ago when they had those heavy rains here and then the big winds and all these huge trees were being uprooted. Not knocked over, but uprooted.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, used to be my mechanic, he's retired. He was driving down just some side street in Van Nuys, and a tree fell down, crushed him, dead. Boom. You talk about timing.
Seriously.
That had to be something to see, you know? But it was really sad. I mean, the guy was a great mechanic.
Do you know that 7 people are killed every year by falling coconuts?
No.
It's true. I read that.
I got this fear of the tropics.
I read that in some, like, actuarial statistical thing somewhere. Every year in this on planet Earth, there are 7 people killed by falling coconuts.
Well, if you sit under a coconut tree, you need a helmet.
That's what I'm saying. That's kind of a kooky way to go. That's sort of a, like, that's, you know... Like, if I want to go, if I got to go someday, I want to go from a falling coconut, or maybe like a safe falling, like totally go like Roadrunner style, you know what I mean?
Or skiing into a tree.
No, I would not like to go that way.
But that's another strange way to go.
You
got to be able to turn.
No, well, you would think...
Lean! Sonny, lean!
You're a bad person. Well, I mean, seriously, I mean, I know that when you're skiing, you're going, as they say, really fast. But, I mean, you'd think Sonny Bono knew there were trees ahead, right? I mean, you see those coming. It's not like the tree just lurches up out of the snow at you.
Maybe he wasn't wearing his glasses that day. I don't know.
Maybe. Do you want these? I'll wear those next time.
Maybe he was answering his cell phone.
Right, it's
another reason to use a hands-free device.
Entirely possible. Phil Spector, anything interesting, or is it still...
No trial today.
Really?
One of the Bruce Cutler, the defense attorney who once... represented John Gotti.
Yeah.
That's the funniest thing ever. He had to go see a doctor today.
You know, here's an interesting question. Does it say something bad to jurors when Phil Spector, like if you're on trial and your lawyer is the guy who used to represent a mobster, does that send the wrong message to jurors, do you suppose?
I don't know. Gotti got jail time, so, you know.
I guess
they say, he's not that great.
He's not that great. He's no Jerry Spence.
No, he's not.
All right.
He is not that great.
All right. Well, there you go. I think we've made fun of Sonny Bono and trains falling on people. I think our job is done
here.
Hey,
don't forget to walk out of school tomorrow and not go to work or anything in support of illegal immigration.
Oh, it's May... Is it tomorrow May Day?
Tomorrow's all those damn rallies, yeah.
I thought May Day was for the unions or the working man.
It's a national... Well, it's a workers' day. But they're turning this into an immigration.
Hey, do you guys have that dumb, don't buy...
Everything's dumb out here, sir.
The answer is yes. Do you guys have that stupid don't buy gas day?
No.
Okay, because there's a bunch of idiot rabble-rousers.
No way!
What are you doing over there, sir?
I have a surprise for you.
All right. We have a bunch of rabble-rousers here in Portland. We're talking about this moronic don't buy gas day on May 15th.
Well, they've tried that before here.
Well, it's friggin' stupid.
You can't. You know, everybody gasses up the day before.
That's what I'm saying. Everybody just buys gas the day before or the day after.
It was silly. Yeah, when they tried that, I think it was last summer or whatever it was, everything got up to nearly $5 a gallon.
Right.
Everybody tried that, and you couldn't get gas anywhere because... All the gas stations were out because everyone, you know, went in and gassed up long before. It didn't work.
Best laid plans of mice and idiots.
It didn't work.
All right, Jim Roop, enjoy the rest of your day, my friend.
Thank you, and whatever your surprise is, I hope it's a good one.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, it will be.
There you go, Jim Roop. Now, I got to say this, Sarah. Can I just read this email to you?
No, I want to play something for you first.
But can I read this email first?
Okay.
This email says, Rick, according to the final shooting script for Dirty Dancing, it is, quote, and he's quoting that from the script, it is Nobody Puts Baby in the Corner. Have you pre-listened to this?
No.
I don't really know this movie all that well. How long do we have?
Here we go, right now.
Nobody Puts Baby in the Corner.
Yeah!
I heard the.
He said ah!
I heard the.
You bastard.
Nobody Puts Baby in the Corner.
All right, it's the. Okay, well, we're both right then.
How are you right? There's no possible land.
I'm really
you
not.
Are right.
I'm really not. All right. It's 503-733-2970. About something about which I don't even care. All right, there you go. Well, there you go. See, you left the program smarter than when you came here, kids. It is Nobody Puts Baby in a Corner. There you go. The Rick Emerson
Show. Bit ever.
Oh, no. Don't even get me. You know what? I got into a big argument with somebody about the other night. I got into a big fight with somebody the other night about that stupid... I'm sorry. I don't mean stupid because I know that... What's her name? Jan is listening. about that Chris Isaak song, Wicked Game. I got into a big fight with somebody the other night about whether it's I don't want to fall in love or I want to fall in love. Which is it? Go.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know that song, Wicked Game?
I don't want
to. Oh, wait, which part? You know, the chorus where he says, fall in love.
I thought it was don't
want
to fall in love.
Is it? Is it or is it I want to fall in love? You, I swear to God, you listen to it, you can't tell. I listened to that song like 50 times in a row and I couldn't tell. And you know what? If you Google the lyrics, you get an even result for both sets. If you Google, I don't want to fall in love and I want to fall in love, you get like the same amount of results for both phrases. So not even the people on the internet know.
There is not even the people on the internet.
There is no, and the people on the internet know everything. I can't, for the life of me, I don't know how the chorus to that Wicked Game song by Chris Isaak goes. Because I Googled it, and there is no consensus on internet lyric sites about that Chris Isaak song. So there you go. I can just
and the people on the internet didn't even know.
The people on the internet are really smart. All right, it's 1:25. Oh, for the love of God.
So what are we going to get to today?
See, Scotty is insisting that it's I want to fall in love. But I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that. All right, Doug, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up? Hi.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Rick?
Well, I'm okay.
I think it was a baby in a corner. I'm going to side with Sarah.
Did you really call just about that?
No, there's a...
Because how Pink small Floyd, your life would be, yes?
It is very small.
Okay.
Pink Floyd, The Wall, Goodbye Blue Sky. There's a little girl in the very beginning. She says, look, Mommy, there's a little plane up in the sky.
Yes. I think it's an arrow god. No. I'm stopping this now. Stopping this now. I can see where this is going. This is going to be one of those stupid when a man loves a walnut kind of discussion. No, I am stopping
when
this now. You know what I'm talking about. This is going to be one of those excuse me while I kiss this guy discussions about wacky misheard songs. Lyrics. No, not on my watch. No, sir. Thank you.
Okay, buddy.
No, I'm losing your call. I'm not even going to use the thing. I'm losing here. I'm losing your call. There you go. We're done.
Like Madonna's? Like
no,
that.
No. I will not let this deteriorate into stupid misheard song lyrics.
All right, are we breaking them?
We have to. That's the only way to end this. Oh, God. All right. Well, now I got to wait. Now I got to hear it. I don't mean to say it's a stupid song. I love this song. I really do. But the song was
it's
making...
It's a sexy song.
It's a beautiful song. It's a legitimately beautiful song. And I was a... it was in the early days of my career as a DJ when this song came out. So I will always equate this with working late nights at a radio station when I was the only one in the building. You know, kind of a... I don't know, kind of a romantic time of my life. You know, I was just starting my radio career and so forth. And...
This model, what's her name in this video?
Helena Christensen.
She's so pretty.
Alright, so...
It's okay.
See, I don't even care. And yet here I am. God damn, I suck.
I think you care more than you let on, Rick Emerson.
Shut up. Oh, come on! And it just stopped? Did you do that intentionally?
I swear to God, I'm over on this computer.
Oh, come on! And it just quit playing. Here.
Wait.
Oh, are you kidding me? Oh, God, why must thou mock me? We're breaking now. Just play some Sabbath or something. Oh, yeah, this is like Chris Isaak. All right, back after this. And because of that Jeff guy earlier today, I can't say that I wish I was dead. You know, because if I did that, God would kill me. You know that's how today is going. I would do it, and I would walk out of here and be run down by a Brinks truck. Back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Show. I swear to God, if it hangs up again here...
I don't think it will. It's done buffering.
You're going to kill us all.
He was really hot.
Still is, I think.
Yeah.
Good looking man. Don't want to fall in.
Yeah.
All right. In your face, Scotty.
It's a subtle don't, but I believe it's a don't.
I almost can't even hear it.
He's all hot and sultry and mumbly.
Is this, are you watching this on the YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
Is this where he's on the beach, the black and white video?
They're all caressing each other, yeah.
Boy, that's one of the hottest videos. That is one of the most beautiful videos ever made. It's the black and white, and there's that sequence of him standing there with his, like, khaki pants on and the clouds billowing behind him.
Mm-hmm.
That really is just, like, one of the hottest videos ever made.
Oh, totally.
And it's beautiful, too. It really is just aesthetically beautiful. Let's hear it one more time, and then we'll go to the news. Yeah, Helena Christensen, I think is her name. There's an alternate version of this, which is just like him sitting in a house with his guitar that nobody cares about. What a debut single.
I hear a quiet don't.
God damn it, now I don't know. Are we really spending hours of my life talking about this?
Our lives, Rick.
I'm dragging you all to the grave with me. This was his debut single. Just amazing. This song, this really is an instant classic. This is the very definition of an instant classic. Why could you sit and listen to this? This reminds me a lot of a group called the Mavericks, who have an album called Music for All Occasions, which is sort of a lot of variations on this song.
And this is the part when it's the close-up and they're covered in dirt.
And she's got that vacant look in her eyes.
Yeah, where she's looking away and her eyes are so light, they look almost like transition.
She's a weird-looking girl, too. I mean, she's hot, but she does have that weird vacant look on her face.
She's a supermodel.
Meow.
If you look like that, you don't really have to read up.
For God's sake. You don't have to wear a pantsuit. Are we really just sitting here listening to Chris Isaac? All right, ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
VH1 classic. That really is an instant classic, though, and I'm pretty sure that was his first single, which is just, you know, that was, so one song like that. That's all you need, man. You can just play to the horny housewives the rest of your life. It's true.
That's an unpleasant phrase.
No, I'm just saying you can just go on the road and just play to just hot chicks the rest of your life with that one song. You know it's true. All right. Well, here's Tim Riley.
The number of Portland area residents looking for concealed handgun licenses has spiked in the 2 weeks since a gunman killed 32 at Virginia Tech. Weekly requests for the licenses have tripled in Multnomah County and doubled in neighboring Washington County. Yes, the world's a dangerous place today. Everybody needs a gun. People see this and they panic. Applications for a license you must complete a gun safety course before requesting a licensing appointment. And elsewhere in the state, the Oregon Firearms Academy in Lebanon added extra safety classes in May and June to satisfy the growing demand. Even with additional classes, the academy is booked well into fall. So I guess people think they're going to be ready if they have a gun on them in case some crazy person goes nuts.
That's usually how it works. Yeah. Of course, having a gun never works out badly. Yeah. That never ends up going wrong somehow. All right, whatever.
Meanwhile, villagers at a wedding in eastern India decided the groom arrived too drunk to get married, so the bride married the groom's more sober brother instead. The groom was drunk and misbehaved with guests, and the local villagers chased him away.
I swear to God, I thought it was going to end up involving Richard Gere somehow and run out of the country. We've got this. Do you know who directed the video for Wicked Game? Anyone?
No.
No.
Here's a hint. He was doing a really thinly veiled infomercial on Dennis Miller this morning.
Oh, really?
David Lynch
did that?
Yeah. Did you hear David Lynch this morning?
I did.
Boy.
And you and Tim both walked in like 10 minutes apart from each other and said the exact same thing.
It was the worst interview. I like the Dennis Miller show. I really do. But goddamn, that was terrible. That was the worst interview I've ever heard. That makes my interview sound sterling.
Well, it was like he's selling, you know, cyber potato peelers or something.
Exactly. Oh, God. All right. It was like they told him, look, make sure you don't do anything interesting during this. Make sure you stay away from anything that the audience might care about. All right, it's Tim Riley.
Toxins in the environment could be causing honeybee populations to dwindle in New Brunswick, Ontario, and northeastern states. Beekeepers in New Brunswick have reported an 80% decline in hive population. How do they go about counting these bees?
I don't know the answer. That's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Is it like at the fish hatchery where there's just like some red line in a tree and a guy...
Exactly.
Sing.
That guy was one of those things that they fly by.
Well, apparently these insects have been leaving their hives and not coming home afterwards.
Yeah, they're out drunk whoring around.
The cause of the problem is still unknown, but researchers at the University of Illinois may be on track by linking the bee losses to increased insecticide use. There are some insecticides that can interfere with honeybee memory, and all of a sudden this has happened in the last 2 weeks. So don't ask me why.
So we've got to focus on the environment and put the insect aside.
Perhaps so.
That was a really, really lame attempt to reach at a joke, which is not even original. That's from Mant with John Goodman, or from a matinee. You know what I'm talking about. Mant.
I know what you're talking about.
Mant. Tim Riley.
Well, skincare experts are warning you to protect yourself from the sun as the summer months approach. This really is an Orient-type story, but you never know. Because the sun's always hidden behind the clouds here. Dr. Gendler of what hospital is she with? The NYU Medical Center says it's important to educate yourself on what sunscreens provide the best protection.
Best to use a totally protective UVA, UVB sunscreen. It's broad spectrum, with the highest SPF you can get, and just use it every day underneath your makeup. Don't think that because makeup has some SPF put into it that makes it a good sunscreen. It does not.
But she sounds like a dried-out crone. Seriously, lighten up, sister.
Britney Spears' comeback performance was postponed.
Aww.
She had been quietly preparing to do a live show at the Los Angeles nightclub, but at the last minute she canceled. Spears had been rehearsing at the 40 Deuce in Los Angeles for a Wednesday show complete with backup singers, but canceled at the last minute. She has to get back to performing on a small scale before she gets back in front of a big crowd.
More intimate venues. Yeah. The band's appeal has become more selective.
The singer apparently thought that the club, which is known for its burlesque shows, would be a good place for a post-rehab appearance. Despite repeated rehearsals at the last minute, Sony decided that she wasn't quite ready for the show.
Well, there's no one who's going to go see her now.
Mm.
I mean, who is the...
I'd see her. For a chance for that wig to go flying off her head, are you kidding me?
I guess that's the only audience left for Britney is the train wreck audience. All right.
Justin Timberlake fans were told... They could not touch. Oh, they could touch, but not grab the sexy back singer. There's been quite specific about what is allowed and what is not allowed on stage during his concert. We've never known anything like this. It was hysterical, says one source. This sounds like a planted story. Adding some fans ignored the rule and ran on stage and grabbed the former boy bander. Justin just looked a bit perturbed on stage.
Yeah, that totally sounds like something. That sounds like a PR flack doing his work right there. And badly, I might add. So, all right, well, there you go. That's going to be my contract, by the way, that people can only grab me. They can't touch me in any way other. They can't hug me, but they can grab me. That's going to be my my new rule.
Time for Bush Watch.
Here's your Bush Watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
The president's kind of in charge. He's got the whole country saying, that's my Bush. Life is hard, that's a price of fame when you're president.
Everyone knows your name.
What's that say? It's my Bush. I can't believe he's actually in the White House.
That's
all. Well, the president's job performance is currently viewed positively by 28% of the U.S. adults, the lowest since he took office.
Well done, sir.
7 in 10 view his job performance in a negative light. Almost half, 48%, who say his job performance is poor. Since February, the president has dropped one-third, 32%, who viewed his job positively, and 67% who gave him negative marks. Vice President Dick Cheney had his lowest job approval. Just one-quarter of adults view him in a positive light, while over two-thirds, 68%, view his job performance negatively. This is down from February, which was the previous low, with 29% say his job performance was positive and 67% says it was negative.
I don't really mean to be picking a partisan fight here, but I really would like to talk to somebody who's in that 28% that really feels Bush is doing a bang-up job and just to know what they think he's been stunningly successful at. I'm not saying, I mean, I'm the first to admit it. Who knows? Maybe he's been really good at something behind the scenes that we just haven't seen. Something that we're not privy to. And Dick Cheney is simply evil, and so it doesn't really surprise me that he's only going to do it. You know, do you get the feeling Dick Cheney doesn't even care about that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Dick Cheney, Bush at least sort of wants to be liked, and I think he gets sort of frustrated and flummoxed when he's not. But I get the feeling that Dick Cheney doesn't even care. In fact, I get the feeling that Dick Cheney sort of just would, like, if his job approval rating was really high, he also wouldn't care about that. He just sort of is busy growling and grousing about things and probably just, you know, wishes most of the American people would just shut the hell up and let him run things. So, all right, well, What are you going to do?
Oh, for the first time, all of the political figures and institutions in the survey have a negative job performance rating. That includes Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, who for the first time since assuming her office is viewed negatively by half adults. In February, 46% of adults viewed her positively, 48% negatively. She still has the highest positive performance rating at 45%.
But see, that's just dumb, because that's Americans just weighing in. I don't even really know what she does.
People don't know what she does.
That's the thing. I don't really...
She plays the piano.
She plays the piano and dresses like a Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
That's the, even...
Is there a fire?
Oh, that's good. Jeff McGinley just came in and grabbed the fire extinguisher. That makes me feel
good. Said nothing and left.
Save yourselves. Alexander, you're the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hello. Hey, if there's a fire, you know, you guys can run.
Thanks.
We'll be fine without you.
That's not true.
Okay. Well, you're right. And I am a glorious bastard.
Thank you.
So, you know. Hey, I was just calling up to personally invite you. This is Alexander, the furniture maker.
Oh, this is the guy. You're the guy who makes stools.
Well, and tables.
Yeah.
And cabinets. I mean, you know. But this weekend, there's going to be a craft fair at the
Is that fair with an E on the end of it? Do I have to wear a jester hat with little bells?
No, that's a Renaissance fair. This is a craft fair. They got the jewelry and the pottery and the furniture beakers.
Let me just ask you this:
wooden clocks in the shape of Oregon.
Lots of things made out of St. Helens ash. I don't mean to be caustic. I really don't, and I don't want this to seem like it's a product of what has been labeled my Monday grumpiness today, but do I really seem like a craft fair kind of person to you? I mean that honestly. That is a sincere question.
Well, it's the community bulletin board enough.
Seriously.
No, it's not
school of civic. Are you advertising for a roommate or maybe a one-way ride to Seattle?
No. You see, you guys do the advertising for EcoPDX, and one of the cuts that you do says, you know, it's not as expensive as having custom furniture made for you, right?
I'm reaching for the disconnect sounder.
Oh. Wait.
And it's too late. No.
Oh.
I'm sorry. No. I'm sorry. Did it seem like he was having to sort of look up each word before he used it? That call just going on forever. Rick, I have something to say about a craft fair. I was it was like my whole life was going in slow motion. Hey, speaking of Renaissance fairs, you know who had to go to a Renaissance fair over the weekend?
Mara?
No. Susan Reynolds. Because I don't mean to be like I'm poking fun, but her kid apparently is. You know, her kid is providing a little bit of a challenge to her life, and I guess her kid is like flunking out in history or failing or something. And so to get extra credit for her history class, and I think at this point it's not extra credit like to bump it from an, there's extra credit that's bumping it from like an A- to an A, and then there's extra credit so that you don't fail out. I believe in order to get extra credit so she wouldn't fail her history class, Susan was obliged to take her to a Renaissance fair. Which, absurdly, you can get history credit by going to a Ren fair. I don't know where it was. But Susan came into the office and said, she's like, oh, I spent part of this weekend in a Renaissance fair. And that is fair with an E on the end of it, by the way. You know, where, like, there's a lot of people selling you, like, wouldst thou like a Diet Coke? Boy, you know, and something, when I die and I'm punished by being sent to what Mormons would call spirit prison, or what Catholics would call purgatory. Not my hell. It's not quite bad enough to be hell, but my purgatory is going to be a Renaissance fair. Just a bunch of idiots, just a bunch of people. I mean, look, and I know that there's a lot of people in the audience who probably go to Renaissance fairs, and God love you, there's room for all this. The Rick Emerson Show is a big tent, and I know many people in the audience, many of the same people who speak Klingon, probably spend a lot of their time at Renaissance fairs. I'm just saying, for me, I would rather have beetles shoved into my eyes, okay? I would rather have my head filled with lice.
And people dancing around with wands and crap.
Totally. Look,
No.
The Society for Creative Anachronism will be jousting. Wouldst thou like to see a live-action chess game? Really, seriously, I would rather have my head filled with fire ants. I cannot even tell you the living hell that I find Renaissance fairs to be. God damn. And it's always a bunch of fat guys with bad beards. You know it's true. Never anybody good looking at a Ren Faire. Ren Faires are always... Ren Faires are always... Unless it's like chicks that they brought in just for that occasion, Ren Faires are always stocked with just the most unattractive people you've ever seen. And I say this as... And I'm not an attractive man myself, but I know that... And I know that there's social events that I take part in that don't necessarily attract like the most aesthetically pleasing sections. Look, we can't all be in a Chris Isaac video, but I'm just saying... You go to a Ren Faire, and not only that, the guys at a Ren Faire are not allowed to be hideous, but they're hideous, and then they're wearing, like, tight pantaloons. You know what I mean? It's always a lot of, hello, m'lady, look at my codpiece. And it's just, like, the most hideous-looking guys you've ever seen in your life. All right, here's Timberlake. Let's do one more here, and then we'll move on.
100 tires are slashed in felony flats. Dozens of Southeast Portland families woke up to find their cars were vandalized.
But yeah, but they'd stolen all of those cars anyway, probably. Cars probably didn't belong to them.
Well, more than 100 flat tires you found this morning. It's kind of like keeping an eye out for your neighbor, said one resident. It's bad when somebody takes it out and, well, all the neighbors now have to get together. The thieves among us. Police have made an arrest in this case and don't have any suspects at this time.
No, seriously. I mean,
anyone with information is urged to call the Portland police, and extra operators have been hired because they expect a flood of phone calls.
And searching felony... you heard that phrase, don't bring sand to the beach? That's like searching for sand at the beach. I mean, really, where are you even going to start? I mean, come on. Just throw a net over that whole place. You know it's true.
So 100 tires and nobody sees a thing.
Well, of course not. Don't snitch. There's no snitching, Tim. Oh, Susan has clarified this. It was at Pacific University in Forest Grove. She says, many crusty hippies. And then she signs it, would ye like another giant turkey leg? Have we all been to a Ren Faire here? You've never been to a Ren Faire?
No,
that you would have been dragged to.
Well, my parents have dragged me to a lot of weird things, but...
Oh, goddamn. It's the worst. It's hell on earth.
Ooh.
I
remember, like, the school would have, like, weekend events. Like, you walk by and you happen to stumble across one, and it's just
goddamn,
weird.
It's horrible.
And, like, all, like, the malnourished, like, you know, stringy-haired girls, like, wearing their little fairy hats and dancing around. I just can't do it.
No, it's... yeah. No,
where did this take place again?
Let's see. Ren Faire, of course, signs it with an E. Pacific University in Forest Grove.
That's interesting. Investigators have been called in to investigate three small fires starting at Pacific University in Forest Grove. The fires are found outside the offices of two faculty members and inside a classroom in the upper stories of Jefferson Hall, which houses the school's optometry department.
Wouldst thou care to join me in storming the optometry department, fair maiden?
Well, apparently, finals in the optometry department were coming up.
Yeah.
Somebody wasn't prepared.
Ren Faires are awful, though. I mean, they're just... I remember as a kid going because... why did I go? I'm trying to think now why I went. Because as a teenager, I wasn't especially into fantasy stuff. And I wasn't... And it's just... I mean, really... And I don't know... I mean, there's white, and then there's just... unbelievably white. And Ren Faires are just it might actually be the single whitest way to spend your weekend, going to a Ren Faire. It really is just jaw-droppingly Caucasian. And it's like a whole lot of, and it's a whole lot of people like walking around, and it's people who you know own like every Mannheim steamroller record, and they've got they've got a dog named Strider. All right, well, in any event, 503-733-2970. All right, Jeff McGinley will be joining us here in just a second.
Tell us where the fire is.
I think, seriously, the fact that he just came in and clutched the fire extinguisher and then sort of scuttled out the door really quickly is a little unnerving. Let's see, Jim, you're on the Rick Emerson. Ooh, I've been neglecting the phones today. I feel bad about that. I'm sorry.
Would you like a turkey leg?
I don't think would ye like a turkey leg should be our new catchphrase, but thank you, sir.
It's
have you spent time at a Ren Faire?
Yeah, you walk through there, and if you're not flashing cash and spending money, they look at you like you're poison.
Well, and it's just, the thing about it is, here's the thing about Ren Faires, and again, I don't have a problem with, literature of a certain bent or, if people want to spend their time reading the collected works of, what are you doing? Well, I'm going to sit home and read the appendices for the Cimmerillion. Well, whatever. I mean, I don't care. Not like I'm some hepcat. But it's like, the thing about people at a Ren Faire is that people at a Ren Faire act completely oblivious to how ridiculous they look. Like, that's the thing. Like, there's no... Like, at least, like, you talk to a guy like Aaron Geek in the City Duran. He's a good example. Aaron is a guy, and I say this with no malice, Aaron's a guy who spent a lot of his life at Star Trek conventions and comic book shows. That's fine, whatever. But if you talk to Aaron, Aaron is sort of aware that on some level that's kind of ridiculous. I'm not trying to down it. I mean, comic books are a legitimate art form. Star Trek is a great show, whatever. I'm not trying to down any of that stuff. But he kind of knows how silly it is. Sort of like when I'm sitting there at the Dio concert or whatever, like, I'm kind of aware that Dio's retarded. I know that. That's what makes it so great. You know what I mean? When Gene Simmons is flying around breathing fire and spitting blood and saying he's the God of Thunder, I'm like, you know, yeah, God of Thunder. But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, this is ridiculous. You know, like, I'm aware that it's stupid. And the fact that it's stupid is kind of what makes it great. People at Ren Fairs have no sense of how ridiculous they looked. And you get the idea that if you were to point it out, like, they'd be really offended, and then they'd, like, challenge you to some sort of a...
Oh, no, they're totally into it.
Shall I duel for my honor, uncouth sir? And you're just, you're like, okay, are you aware that you're walking around like you know, like you're an extra from Blackadder? You know, they just have no notion. They are completely oblivious to and in denial about how retarded they look. That's my whole thing with Ren Faire people, is they're just oblivious and joyless about the whole thing.
How about in the middle of summer when it's 98 degrees and this dude is walking around in full armor, the knight in shining armor?
Oh, and it's always guys, and Sarah totally nailed it, guy, and you'll see these guys downtown in Portland sometimes, long stringy hair, the bad beard, and wearing like a purple cloak, you know what I mean? And sitting next to you on the max with like a, and around his neck will be the following, he'll be wearing the following necklace. Around his neck is like a necklace that's a pewter dragon's claw clutching a small crystal ball.
And smelling like a rose.
Serious, and you're looking at the guy and you're just thinking to yourself, good God, man, where did society go wrong? What did your family not give you that you needed? Oh, all right, well, you know, whatever.
Hey, you want to talk about what I called about?
I don't know, is it something horrible? What is it?
It's about George Bush. You were talking about...
How did I say no to that? What about George Bush?
You like to talk to the 28%. Well, this is a true story. I'm from Salem, and I pulled up to a woman at a stoplight, and she had a Bush Cheney sticker, and I asked her to roll her window down, and I asked her, I said, do you know that somebody stuck a Bush sticker on your rear window? And she gave me a double take, kind of snickered, then gave me the finger.
I was behind this car, I don't know, a few weeks ago, and it had a homemade sticker, like the guy clearly printed it out of his computer at home, and it was like, you know, fight the liberal media, and it was liberal with three L's. It was like L-I-B-E-R-A-L-L, liberal media.
So, kind of self-explanatory.
Yeah, tells you what you need to know. All right, thank you, sir.
God bless you.
All right, what a strange day today is. Let's welcome out of the Rick Emerson Show, AM 970, Chief Engineer Jeff McGinley. Hello, sir.
Hi. Hey,
what's up?
Yeah, what's up with the fire?
We were just getting him serviced. Just getting him serviced.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So now there is a fire.
You think I don't know what I'm doing?
I'm just saying the fact that you came in and clutched a fire extinguisher and then sort of scurried away. With
tomorrow's May Day. Yeah, that's right. There's a lot more closer ones in my office than this one. So.
Oh, and by the way, now that means that there is a fire. We have nothing in here with which to put it out.
I just brought it back. It's right behind Sarah's bike.
There it is. Okay,
it's right there.
Well, there's no need to be caustic. I'm just saying. Oh, tomorrow is May Day. Have we put out the yearly memo about how hippies are going to decimate the coin tower?
If they did over at the coin tower, yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Does that ever happen?
With a few bad individuals.
A few bad apples. On riot?
No, it almost caused me to riot one year because they closed the Starbucks early and I couldn't get my coffee. I wanted to run into the crowd with a
bad... You're just, you know, the thing is, if you were going to construct a contrarian statement, I don't know that I could have done a better job right there. Unless you were going to note that you drove there in the Hummer.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's the thing, I mean, like crap,
idiots protesting, like hippies protesting on May Day is enough to make me go get that Hummer and just drive around town, like dumping oil into storage vents.
I could go talk to Beckaberta and see if I can drive around all day.
Seriously, just drive it around and just like toss 6-pack rings into seagull blocks.
All right.
So hey, what's up with our phones? I know that we're on a quest to get them fixed.
That's right.
Why did Quest cut one of our phone lines?
They were looking for, we've got a lot of pairs coming in the building. And we've got this new service that's coming in. And they were looking for open pairs.
Does this have anything to do with the construction going on downtown?
No, this is something specific. Two guys showed up. and decided that you didn't need line one.
Well, of course not.
No.
No, no, and no way. Why would we need phones?
Either that or they're big listeners of the Emerson Show and realize that we've had phone problems ever since you guys got over here.
Let me ask you this. When you called Quest about this, did they deny having done it?
No. No, no, no. And they reassured me that someone had come this morning.
Did they lie about someone having come to the building?
Yes, because I immediately ran upstairs and talked to the gatekeeper, Dave Zinn. And he said that no one had ever shown up.
Did you get Quest on the phone and tell them that they were lying?
Yes.
And what did they say?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's correct. I'm sorry. I'm sorry you have caught me in an untruth, Jeff McGinley. How unfortunate for all of us.
Yes.
So if I were to ask you when these phone lines are going to be fixed, would I regret it?
Your guess is really as good as mine at this point. I'd like to thank them, though, for giving me the biggest rage of Tourette's I think I've ever experienced in my life.
Yeah, you're not a happy guy. How long have we been without? How long have these phone lines not been working? It's been at least five days now, right? Because it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and today.
Yeah.
So that's a good five.
Yeah.
Well, it's only a call-in radio show. Why would we possibly need the phone lines to work correctly?
No.
So what do you think? By tomorrow?
Let's hope.
You don't know, do you?
He's not committing.
No, I can't.
I don't blame you.
What am I supposed to do? Come in and say Quest is going to be here and be fine and do us the favor of coming and, you know, fixing what they screwed up to begin with? I'm not bitter.
I'm not bitter. All right, fantastic. Well, I'm sorry, but thank you for bringing me a visa earlier today.
Well,
my day's going better.
I'd like to apologize to everyone who's trying to call in today. And pass the buck. It's not my fault. Don't call me. Don't email me.
Thank you.
I don't want to hear from you.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Jeff McGinley, ladies and gentlemen. 503-733-2970. Rick, when I was in the sixth grade, my parents decided to take us all to a Ren Fair for reasons I have still failed to suss out. Anyway, it was at the Ren Fair that my parents taught me a new word to describe the women's costumes. Risqué. I have a fantastic picture of me, an 80-pound scrawny doofus with a Mad Magazine t-shirt and a jean jacket with rolled-up sleeves, standing next to a woman with the lowest-cut, cleavage-bearing satin top complete with extraneous ties to cinch it or uncinch it open. This woman had breasts the size of my head, Rick. To make it even funnier, whoever took the picture cut off the head of the woman. So it's two basketball-sized bosoms and my head, which came to the exact height of said bosoms, and my eyes are locked in an expression of wonder and fear. I remember it being a good day. Let's all take a break and have some grog and mead. It's true. All right. Here's another question. My question is this, and it really has to do with, like, the fantasy genre. And this is sort of a rhetorical question because I don't really care enough to discuss it. But the fantasy genre, which is, and again, I'm not saying this from the position of, I'm not some anti-fantasy. I mean, I read The Lord of the Rings. I read There and Back Again, A Hobbit's Tale. I read the Chronicles of Narnia and, you know, whatever. I stopped short. It's not like I sit around and read Piers Anthony all day or something. But, I mean, it's not like I've never read fantasy in my life. But have you ever noticed this? That fantasy books and novels and role-playing games and fantasy movies, even, especially, fantasy books and movies that take place in fictitious worlds, in other words, they don't take place on Earth. They take place in some completely fictitious country where dragons fill the air. Have you noticed that fantasy books always take place in some fictitious world that really is just England? I mean, it always is just England. Why are there no, like, medieval fantasy novels set in, like, Nigeria? It really is just the whitest. I have no explanation for why that is. I don't think I have ever read some, like, sword and sorcery novel that actually took place in a country filled with anything but really pale English white people. I'm not saying it's any kind of, like, bigotry or racism. It is just really peculiar to me, though. So, I don't know. It's one of those things that I think about. One of those things that I think about so you don't have to. But now you will. It's 503-733-2970. Look at this pile of things that I haven't gotten to. I haven't even gotten to the opening line of the Portland song yet.
Oh, yeah, you told me a little bit of it. Sounds really good.
And we got Peter Carlin we got to get to. By the way, speaking of all things Carlin, don't forget, go to 970.am, 970.am, and sign up to be an AM 970 Glorious Bastard. We're giving away 10 pair of tickets to see George Carlin randomly to folks who sign up. And, of course, one of those is going to be bumped up to front row tickets. And the show is Friday, so I think you got to do it, like, right away because I think it's actually drawing is Thursday. So go to 970.am, sign up to be an AM 970 Glorious Bastard, etc. Let's take a break here. We'll come back with more around the corner. It's the Rick Emerson Show. You can call 503-733-2970. The phone may or may not work when you dial that number. 503-733-2970. Back after this.
love Michael Bolton.
Are you really asking for a show of hands?
No. I don't
like Emerson in the back. And of all the songs with the play by this guy.
You just said when a man looks... It doesn't sound like Walnut.
I didn't say that I thought it was. I'm saying that's one of the stupid... Here we are again. This is like the third segment. I swore we weren't going to talk about this. This, we really are like one shade away from like Doug and Skippy territory here. I mean, come on.
What's the movie when Meg Ryan was alcoholic?
28 Days Later. No, 28 Days.
No, it's not. That's Sandra Bullock.
Oh, When a Man Loves a Woman.
Oh, that's the... Okay.
I'm confusing the two. There's 28 Days Later. She's an alcoholic zombie. Brains and booze. Yeah, it is When a Man Loves a Woman, which I believe was written by Al Franken. Why are you playing this? Is this because of the When a Man Loves a Walnut thing?
Yes.
I was just using that as an example. You didn't have to play this.
Okay.
Oh, this is horrible. I know that, look, we both share an appreciation for cheesy music, but Michael Bolton is just terrible. You have to know that.
I have a weakness for Michael Bolton. Well, just the stuff right around this time period.
His earlier work.
Yeah, it's like, how am I supposed to live without you?
This email says, Rick, about the Beatles paperback writer, I always thought it was pay for my Chrysler. Here we go. It's going to be nothing but this for the rest of the day. All right, this is... Here's the thing. I'm just going to make this one final comment. I'm just going to make this one final comment about misheard song lyrics. Which is that one of the famous misheard song lyrics allegedly... See, I think that misheard song lyrics guy makes some of that crap up. Who really honestly thinks that it's Last Night I Dreamt of Some Bagels? Because you...
I didn't really think it, but it really sounds like it. In my brain, I've never replaced it.
I was walking to the bathroom and Scotty was like, I always thought it was, you know, Last Night I Dreamt of Some Bagels. And clearly he didn't. No one thinks that. No one honestly thinks it's When a Man Loves a Walnut. Because there would be no reason...
They're very frustrated.
Because it's just stupid. Because it's one of those things that guy has made a whole fortune off of, and it's a thing that doesn't really happen. It's not like we're talking about Smells Like Teen Spirit, where the lyrics are just gibberish and it could mean anything. You know, because Smells Like Teen Spirit, I mean, or like any of those songs, I mean, that's all. The lyrics are all just crap, and they can be, who knows what those lyrics are even about. But with a song like When a Man Loves a Woman, where you know that lyrically speaking, it's a very simple, straightforward narrative... Think about the brains that it takes to listen to that song and honestly believe that it might be When a Man Loves a Walnut.
Well, which ones do you think are believable?
None of them are believable. Except, I'm just going to make this one observation, though, which is, I mean, unless you're five, the only observation I'm going to make is that there's this Creedence Clearwater Revival song, Bad Moon Rising. And one of the famous misheard song lyrics, supposedly, is... don't go out tonight, it's bound to take your life. And of course the line is, there's a bad moon on the rise. So there's supposedly one of those wacky misheard lyrics where it's, don't go out tonight, it's bound to take your life, there's a bathroom on the right. So a couple years ago, like in 2004, I see John Fogerty singing Bad Moon Rising live, and he gets to the first chorus. And he just puts on the biggest S-eating grin, and he says, I swear to God, he sings, there's a bathroom on the right.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, like, gives a big cheesy wink. So, there's no reason for that story. Now Mike is calling about Ren Faire. And Sarah and I were talking about this during the break, and then we'll talk to Scott. Is it 2:30 already almost? Jesus,
oh,
God,
man.
Where does the time go? We were talking about this during the break. I realize that I sound disproportionately irritated at Ren Faire people, especially because, and I'm fully aware of this, that any number of people in the audience are also Ren Faire people. I say that I know this, that a whole lot of the people in the audience who are Star Trek people, Star Wars people, Klingon people, are also Ren Faire people. So, I mean, I understand that. I'm just saying, I have no idea why Ren Faires irritate me so much. I mean, because it's like, Star Trek conventions don't irritate me. I don't really go to Star Trek conventions, not anymore. I've gone to some. But I mean, Star Trek conventions don't bug me. Comic book conventions. I'm not a comic guy, not at this stage of my life. Comic book conventions don't bug me. Star Wars conventions don't bug me. Going to OMSI doesn't bug me. Why do Ren Faires irritate me so much? That's the thing. I just can't, and I can't, there's no explanation. I just can't put my finger on it. Mike here on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick, this is Mike from TriMet.
Yes, sir. How can I
help? I had the honor of driving the 57 bus on Saturday, which drove all these people to the Ren Fair.
Oh, lucky you.
Oh, my God. There was two distinct groups. There was the group about 7 o'clock in the morning who were the participants who had, you know, who were there to show people how to do things. And then there was the later group that were the spectators, you know, or posers of Renaissance Fair.
Imagine being a Renaissance Fair poser. Seriously.
So funny. You're driving down the road listening to these people argue about crap that happened 600 years ago.
I mean, imagine being a wannabe Renaissance Fair person. How much lower on the social scale can you possibly fall?
Yeah, the lower people are the ones that can't afford the equipment and the tents, and they're just dressed up in some kind of costume they put together.
Just something they found at Value Village.
And then, you know, it's the age of chivalry and everything.
Right.
Those people are so rude to each other on the bus. I mean, it's just...
And the idea of Ren Fair people taking the bus is hilarious, too, don't you think?
Most of them can't afford cars. I mean, these aren't the highest quality people on Earth. There's not one of them that's under 300 pounds. And, oh, my God, it was... And I did it on overtime, too. I mean, I got paid a lot of money to do it, but it was one of the funniest things I ever saw.
Just a whole bus full of Ren Fair people. I don't know why. That just says that. That says it all to me for some reason.
Picked them all up. They took the MAX train to Hillsborough Transit Center, and then they caught the 57 bus to Old Forest Grove.
Were they talking to you, like in dumb, in stupid Ren Fair speak?
Yes. I was called, you know...
Dost thou take exact change only?
Doth you go to Forest Grove? Yes, I doth.
Fair squire, mightest thou transport me and my comrades to our gathering?
That's it. That was the whole day. Oh, it was so entertaining. And then you've got your common just pat, your gangbangers and your people who are going shopping. And it's, oh, God, it was just hilarious.
Okay, here, let me just say this. Here's the most frustrating part about, Ren Fair people. I don't know why I'm on some, I can't believe that I'm sitting here doing a tirade about Ren Fair people.
What happened to you and some Ren Fair person this weekend?
We were talking about it during the break, though. I mean, you were admitting that they bug you on a special level that you can't quite explain. They bug you on a...
Not to the extent that they bother you, it seems, but they are fairly annoying.
Here's the other thing about Ren Fair people. Ren Fair people are, how do I put this? What's an example that I can use? Well, I'm just going to say this. Ren Fair people, the single most irritating trait they have, and you just sort of alluded to it, is... Have you ever done this where you try to talk to a Ren Fair person, like normally, because like you're trying to find out where the bathroom is, and they insist on talking to you in Ren speak, and you're just trying to figure out, like, where to find a hot dog or something, and you're like, no, seriously, my blood sugar is really low, and where can I find some cheese?
Well, the nature of...
I know not of this hot dog you refer to.
Yeah, the nature of that type of reenacting is you try to put yourself in that time frame, so you spend the whole day being that. But you've never lived until you saw a 400-pound Robin Hood with a plastic bow and arrow.
Seriously, just like the lowest possible ebb tide at the gene pool.
It was magic. It was one of the funniest things I ever saw.
Thank you, sir.
See you later.
All right, there you go. All right, fantastic. No, seriously, do you have any pizza? I know not of this pizza that you refer to.
Oh, man, that is so annoying.
Wouldst thou care for a flagon of mead? And it's like, and you just want to set them on fire. That's the thing, you just want to set them on fire and mock their pleas for mercy.
But it's hard to mock them. Like, you really just want to make fun of them, but then they're so into it.
It's like mocking the retarded.
Yeah, and they're so into it, and it's obviously their lifestyle. It's just so nerdy.
All right. You know what they... Here's the other thing.
It's adults playing dress-up.
That's really what it is. They're sort of like dumb medieval versions of, like, evangelical Christians. Just a lot of people with imaginary friends. A lot of people with imaginary friends engaging in made-up behavior and refusing to acknowledge that it's not real. Ren Fair people really are... They really are just sort of a, like... Ren Fair people are sort of like a, they're sort of like a plume wearing, and you talked about the guy with the, you know, the guys with the poofy hat and the feather.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the girls with the pointy hats and the veil.
Yeah, they're like that. They're like a veiled version of Christians who speak in tongues. That's the thing. That's what it is for me, I think. Irenfair people, they are a flip side of the Christian speaking in tongues coin. Just sitting there engaging in some weird adult fantasy play and just refusing to acknowledge that it's fake. That's my whole thing. I think that's why, like, I could never, and I know that this might push us into awkward territory here, Sarah, so I apologize. But I think that's why I could never, like, you and I have talked about how, with you on the back of the Portland Mercury, you are very sort of reserved in your daily life. Like, you don't show a lot of skin. You dress in a very modest fashion. And people might look at you and you got the crazy hair and the whatever, and you're out a lot. And people might think you're sort of like an edgy kind of, you know, like fast girl. And you're really not. You know, you're very modest. And so, and I think that we sound kind of wacky sometimes, but we're really kind of boring in a lot of ways. And I think, I know this will make you feel awkward, but I think this Renfair thing reminds me of, like, this is why I could never be into any weird, you know, couples who get into the whole thing. Okay, like, now, look.
God, are you going to talk about kinky sex?
No, but you know what I'm saying. You know those couples, like, you've seen those documentaries about, like, the swinging folks or whatever, and it's like a whole lot of, okay, now, you're going to be the bad boy. You're going to be the bad little boy who's failing math class, and I'll be the stern teacher who keeps you after, you know, and makes you write on the blackboard, and then I spank you or whatever, and it's like a whole lot of, like, I think I would just find the whole thing stupid and start laughing. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll be the escaped convict, and you're the warden's wife, and I've caught you at home alone. And, like, I think if I tried that, I would just start giggling, because I would just find it retarded. You know what I mean? Like, it's like when you watch HBO's Real Sex.
I'm sure
what
you want it, and I've had one of my friends, yeah, who are really into it, and I don't think I could do it either.
Into what? Into Renfair or into the other thing?
No, not into the Renfair. Into, like, role-playing.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay, now, I'm Daddy, and I've caught you rifling through Mommy's makeup, and it's time for a spanking. You know, and it's like, and I think I would just start giggling and just find it stupid. And you watch, the perfect example of this was that Real Sex program on HBO. Where they do, and it's like always couples who are doing things like this. And it's like I think I would just find it, like, irritating, and I would just be made impatient by the whole thing. Like, I think I'd just be looking at my watch going, all right, when's the sex start? Should I come back later? You know? Okay, well, whatever. Let's see. Oh, God. Okay, I'm going to take these calls. Then we will reveal the first line of the Portland anthem. Then we'll break and we'll come back with Peter Carlin. Sean, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Why, hello there.
Hello, Rick. How are you?
Hi, what's up, brother?
Kind of a funny story. I am a big fisherman, and hence we take off into the woods a lot to go find small rivers and such. But we happened to be hiking in about 2 or 3 miles one day and came across a very large field of Renfair people just out in the middle of nowhere, acting, jousting, and all sorts of weird crap. But yeah, there's nothing like, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning and coming across what you think is all of a sudden Camelot or some crap like that, and it was a bit odd.
And there's always a guy there playing a flute. Always a guy playing a flute. And then always somebody's cell phone rings about halfway through. You know?
Explain one thing to me about these people. Is there a weight requirement in order to become
a... There's a minimum weight. Yeah, there's a minimum weight requirement, yes. Thou must be at least this fat to engage in this recreation. Yes, no, you're... It's sort of like Civil War reenactors. I feel the same way about that. You know what I mean?
Much the same people. Unfortunate are both. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right. Let's see. How did I know that a call like this would come in? This is from our friend Chris, alias Boba Fett. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
Yeah, I've never done the Renfair stuff, but I know some people that do.
Of course, no, we all do. Trust me. We all know people who do it. That's the thing. Is I say this fully aware that there are any number of people I know personally who engage in Renfair behavior. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple of people I work with are, and, you know, they found out I wore a Star Wars outfit, and they're like, that is so geeky. And yeah. I was like, wait a minute. I said, okay, yeah, I've been told my thing is geeky, but, yeah, I don't run around, even out of costume, you know, speaking like Boba Fett.
Well, and that's the other thing, and, like, I mean, and the difference is that, like, sci-fi people that I typically know are sort of, most of them anyway, sort of know that the whole thing is kind of funny and silly, and they have a good time with it. Whatever, and Renfair people are just sort of like, they're aggressive about it. They're just sort of like, they're just sort of jerkily into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're into it. We're the point where I don't even think once the costume comes off, they realize that it's over until the next convention or whatever.
I'm with you on that, sir. All right, thank you, my friend. All right, there you go. We got to take a break. All right. We'll take a break. Come back, Tim Riley. Tim Riley, do you have news prepared for us?
Oh, happily, yes.
Dost thou have news from... see, I can't even do it. I would be a terrible Renfair person. I don't even know any of the lingo. There ought to be some, like, Firefox extension or something that turns your webpage into Renfair speak. It's like that webpage that'll turn your whole... you turn your whole website into Snoop Dogg, you know, Izzle talk or whatever. Back after this, Tim Riley, Peter Carlin, Lycus at 3, Dynamike at 7. Stay there. Hi. Hey, it's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. This guy says, Rick, why are Renfair simply a hippie phenomenon? Why is there no... There's a redneck version, too. It's called country music. Walking around as though you are a real-life historical character and trying not to pretend, you know, acting as though it's not retarded. Why, howdy. Look at me. He's 1850. All right, ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
The OSP reports a fatal traffic crash. This just happened. Highway 99E and Bella Posse Road, south of Woodburn, is blocking the highway. Reportedly involving a commercial truck and a passenger vehicle. Meanwhile, the driver who was behind the wheel of that gasoline tanker that exploded in flames Sunday at the Bay Bridge in San Francisco, melting the bridge, is still in the hospital. James Mosquito was driving the tanker truck to a gas station in Oakland when the truck crashed into the overpass and burst into flames. The 51-year-old man crawled out of the wreckage, walked nearly a mile to a gas station, and found a cab driver to take him to the hospital.
I was getting well in my car. Then here comes this man. You know, he walked up to me, he goes, please, 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 take me to the nearest hospital. I'm dying. I just got born. I'm burning.
That's nice.
Okay.
All right, then. Well, toxins in the environment may be causing honeybee populations to dwindle. Don't we read this every newscast? I guess we'll continue to do so until the bees come back.
Are we hoping that they'll hear?
There are like 10 or 12 different variations of the story.
I don't understand. Okay, can I just make a comparison here? Here's the thing with the bees.
Let me know there were bees in our fair city earlier this morning before they fill up a truck.
There's still bees around. I call shenanigans on this entire story. This business of bees suddenly being gone, this is the new children are dropping dead from eating peanuts.
The day the bees left.
I mean, do you remember? I mean, look, I know I've made this observation before, but seriously, when you were going to school, did anybody die from eating a peanut? No.
Well, we never counted bees back then.
I'm just saying, this seems like one of those completely bogus, made-up stories that the media has suddenly latched onto, and they're just going to... Is it this slow of a news week that we're really talking about the number of goddamned bees that are flying around somewhere? Seriously.
Well, everyone's on their best behavior after the silence thing.
Shame to be part of the media.
All right. So that's that.
Well, so the bees are all gone, and peanuts are going to kill your children. Except for the ones that were here. But they're all injured anyway, so they're going to have to be put down.
Well, they're being nursed back to health. And they'll be adoptable to loving homes.
For pets or meat.
Mm-hmm. Well, starting this week, all Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants around the country are leaving trans fats off the menu. So does that mean this isn't the Colonel's recipe anymore?
I don't know. No, I think the recipe consists... The recipe, and I mean this sincerely now, I don't believe the recipe has to do with the fats as such. I believe the recipe refers only to the 12 secret herbs and spices.
And which are they?
Well, they're... Secret?
How secret can they be? By process of elimination, can't they figure out what the 12 herbs and... They can't be that many herbs and spices.
And really, if they're being handled by some minimum wage idiot, you got to figure... You probably don't entrust, like it's not like the nuclear football that's being carried around with a special key and a password. I guess they probably could have figured it out by now.
Well, apparently, a Wendy's spokesman said last year they started using cooking oil with zero trans fats to reduce and remove trans fats from every menu item. And the price of fries went up. After they did it.
Okay.
So we don't know if their patrons are any thinner than they were before.
They're not. People are just sending me tons of Renfair stories now. let's see. Rick, by the way, that effing Michael Bolton song is stuck in my head now. It'll be there the rest of the day. Thanks.
Which Michael Bolton song?
Thanks for that. Rick, about Renfair depression and suicide, do you realize you are piercing a huge make-believe bubble that many people cherish? Do you realize you are potentially sending a large population of fat, unsociable losers into a tailspin of depression and self-loathing?
Go to KFC. They stopped using trans fats.
At the start of your program, they were perfectly happy and capable members of society. However, in a period of 4 hours, you have single-handedly stripped them of their dignity, their passion, and their pride. Thank God I'm not a Renfair person. I still feel great. Good job, Rick. Remember, they have swords, though. Swords and armor. You are easy to slay. Or as the bumper stickers always say, you are crunchy and good with ketchup. All right. Let's see. Catherine, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Why? Hello there.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. I am a reformed Renfair freak.
You do have that sort of cadence to your voice. I can hear you saying...
Really? Oh,
you,
damn
I mean,
you.
No. I can hear you saying maiden and vow and dust pretty easily.
Okay. Well, this is the deal. You see, I was... It was a college gig, you know.
You were experimenting.
It was college, you know.
That's what it's for.
Yes, and so I was a dance major / drama major.
No.
And, no, you don't say.
I'm stunned.
So, you know, it was a gig, and I did what they call Beowulf in the Mud.
Oh, God, really?
Beowulf in the Mud. It was this massive pit of warm, gushy Texas mud.
Beowulf in the Mud?
Beowulf in the Mud, as well as... Gosh, what did we do? Else did we do? We did Shakespeare in the Mud as well.
I don't understand. Why were you doing this in the mud?
It was...
Is this the Renfair version of chicks wrestling in the mud at, like, some hillbilly bar?
Well, kind of, except, you know, with the these and the thous and the those and all
well,
of
that's
these,
just
you know,
sad.
Asides. And it was, oh, my God.
Talk a little bit like a Renfair person for me. Come on.
Oh, let's see. Well, where shall we go then, sir?
Oh, I wish I was dead. Oh, I promise not to say that today. Oh, that's
well,
just...
you know what? But see, the thing was, it was a gig for me. It was a gig, you know? And then you get into it and you realize, oh, my God, these people actually do take themselves seriously. And it makes you want to remove their spleen with a rusted oyster fork.
You're fantastic. You're my new favorite person for the remainder of today. You are my favorite person, Catherine.
Oh, well, go on with you now. Stop already.
I don't even know what accent you're talking in now. It's kind of freaking me out. All right.
You know, it's not only Renfair, it's the Society for the Creative Anachronism.
Oh, I know, the jousting freaks.
But they're all the same circles. All of the, you know, the sex freaks. You know, that want to do all the role play stuff. If you go to the, and you're like, oh my God, didn't I just see you? It's like a bad play, you know? You just want to go, weren't you just in that room over there?
Didn't I just see you wearing some furry manacles in another room?
Exactly.
Yeah, awkward.
And now you're wearing a veil and a jousting piece of chainmail or something like that over here.
At least you were only in it for the money.
Not like it was that good, but, you know, with college, it was a gig, you know, and you want to absolutely wretch in somebody's handbag that they take themselves so seriously. And I agree with you on the role-playing thing. I actually was talked into attending one of those dreadful parties once.
What do you mean a dreadful party? Like a sex role-playing party?
Yeah, like exactly. One of those little role... Oh, I have a fabulous story for you. This one woman... She had these, and it was, you know, everybody was just kind of hanging out, you know, pre-party, whatever.
Right.
She had a Barbie that she had tied these very intricate knots about, you know, and
right.
tied up this Barbie. And I was just, you know, I said, oh, well, you know, nice job, whatever, you know. And I gently just dropped the Barbie onto the couch. This woman went into an absolute tantrum. And I'm like, what the hell, what, you know? And this woman said, oh, well, she is into age regression. And you just dropped her Barbie.
Oh, I see. Because there's like that guy, where there's that promo player, that guy where I saw the guy on the Springer show that wanted to dress up in a diaper. And,
And these people take themselves seriously.
I don't care what anybody's into, but it's like, to me, the dividing line is, are you sort of aware on some level that what you're doing is ridiculous? Like, if you can sort of have a sense of humor about it and be like, yes, I'm wearing a diaper and plastic pants, but, you know, what are you going to do? But it's like the people who take it really seriously, and there's just like no sense of humor about the fact that, like, you're...
You can't actually be buying this.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
You know.
All right, Catherine, God bless you. That you're the best call of the day. Thank you.
Oh, why, thank you. And I will definitely call back.
All right, please don't talk like a Renfrew person ever again.
I won't, I promise.
All right, thank you. That's Catherine. There you go. All right. Geez, is the show over already?
Almost.
Do we have time for more news, Tim?
Well, I have one more quick one.
God bless you.
Roseanne Barr is at the top of the list of foul-mouthed, overweight women to take over for Rosie O'Donnell.
I predicted this. I called it last week. I said Roseanne Barr.
She would be at the top. Who else is there? Of course, others in the running include Connie Chung, Whoopi Goldberg, and Joan Rivers.
Oh, God. And see, it's just the usual suspects, isn't it?
There are too many.
You knew Whoopi Goldberg would be on that list. Yeah. You knew it. Just a bunch of shrill, unlikable harpies.
She's just obnoxious just thinking about it without even saying anything.
Thinking about Whoopi Goldberg just hurts. It just hurts me. I mean, it's like someone kicking me in the soul. All right. Well, all right. So there you go. I called that last week, by the way. Scotty, we'll probably not have... is this Peter on hold right here? Really? Okay. Sarah, do we have to break now?
Yeah, I just don't know how much time we're going to have.
Oh, I feel...
Actually, I do. We'll have about 3 minutes.
This is not... all right. Well, hold on a second. Hi, Peter Carlin for the Oregonian.
Hey.
Hi, sir. How you doing?
Oh, I'm okay.
Pizza.
I feel like an ass. We've gotten a hold of you too late now. I don't feel like we can appropriately make... We can't make television hay out of your observations.
Yeah.
Could we have speaks with you later in the week, as they sometimes say?
Have... Yeah, I suppose.
Is the rest of your week busy? Are y'all filled up?
You know, for you, no.
God bless you. See, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Could we talk to you perhaps on Wednesday?
It's possible.
Because that'll mean that we can talk about the Shield as well.
Yeah.
All right. Could we do that? Can I pencil you in?
Sure. Yeah.
My people will call your people.
You got to call my girl. Have your girl call my girl.
Totally. And then we'll meet at the club.
Yeah,
exactly. We'll meet at Elaine's. All right, I'm going to put you back on hold. Sorry about that, Peter. All right, hold on.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Scotty, can you touch Peter? All right. All right, well, let's take like a quick call and then we'll break. Tim, hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
How do you, Emerson? You are on fire today, by the way, sir, and I think that these lackluster shows really bring out your talent in A-plus form. Really quick, I just want to give
a
quick
shout out. Hold on. Was I being insulted just now?
No, sir, I'm serious. I mean,
these lackluster shows...
Well, I didn't mean to say lackluster. I'm just in a hurry because I know you guys are up against it. But like the six-pack into a flock of seagulls, dude, that's A+. Are you kidding me?
What makes the show lackluster in your opinion?
Oh, don't obsess.
It wasn't... I didn't mean lackluster like that. I meant like
you
earlier...
You meant compliments.
I was trying to compliment you, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just being an ass. Go ahead. What did you have to say, sir?
Well, I was just going to say we kind of owe the Renfrew and SCA people a debt of gratitude for keeping the board game industry and internet dating alive. And I did. I worked with a couple of these SCA guys, and it was such a weird dichotomy in which they would recite these grandiose sayings to each other in unison, and then high five each other like they just won the playoffs.
I know.
It was the weirdest thing.
The Society for Creative Anachronism, which I will be honest, that sort of appealed to me when I was like, you know, seven. Because it was guys like beating each other with huge padded sticks. But, you know, it's and I can still get down with the violence part of it. It's just the dressing it up into like inanity that I can't swallow it. I can't.
But at least you have a theme for your next listener party. I'm thinking that it's going to be listener party in the mud.
Yes, I like how they had the idea that they were everything. Beowulf in the mud just doesn't make any sense. And
right.
Shakespeare in the mud. So, God, she sounded hot, though. So, I mean, you know, whatever. We should have got a good call out of the whole thing.
Absolutely. Well, have a good day, sir.
Thank you. No, that was to have a good day, sir. Everybody talking like Quakers. I'm talking like Richard Nixon's mother.
Didn't Simon and Meatloaf in one show.
See, now I want to come up with Renfrew-type responses to everything. Wouldst thou care for a composition of my lute? Yeah, I got another. I love this song. Back after this. Nothing. I spent all day talking about when a man loves a walnut and talking about Renfair people.
We'll just make sure to get some sleep tonight and try for it again tomorrow.
Seriously, I got so little. I don't think I ever got more than half an hour of consecutive. That's not even the right word. Consistent. You know the word. What I'm trying to get to Scotty. And I get to talk to Scotty today. Didn't talk about these opening lines of the Portland song, which should I say it now?
Might as well.
Okay, I think we've got the first line of the Portland anthem. Which means it is now up to you, the people. How long do I have till the music starts?
A minute.
Folks were complaining, and by folks I mean Seamus, were complaining that it was difficult to come up with lyrics without knowing the melody or the meter or the cadence or the whatever. Meter?
You haven't played that once today.
See, now
it feels wrong.
Hold on. Meter? Oh, God damn it. Meter?
I barely knew her.
Okay.
That was awful.
Okay. Feel satisfied now?
No.
Feel satiated? So he was saying, well, without the meter and knowing the syllables and whatever, it's hard to come up with the line. And I do believe we have the first line here. I don't have the name in front of me, but I do believe we have the first line, which is this. It's actually two lines, and I like it because it's several plays on words. It's a play on Sound of Music, which I also like. Roses and raindrops and acres of green, rivers of microbrewed beers and caffeine. See, I think we can get away with saying beers and caffeine and still present it.
It's wordy, but it's good.
I like it, though. And the key is to not make it like the Sound of Music thing. Obviously, the melodies be totally different than
that. Well, that kind of sounds like the beginning of an Irish drinking song.
I want something we can present to the city. So I think you can get away with beers and caffeine. It's not like I'm saying whores and crack houses or something. Roses and raindrops and acres of green. And I like the roses and raindrops because it references the closed bar. It is accurate because the city of roses and rain, and it's a twist on the raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, which is kind of cool.
Going past the clothes, so it's good.
It's kind of gay in that way that I like. Roses and raindrops and acres of green, rivers of microbrewed beers and caffeine. And then it's got the river. See, works in River City, too. So I'm going to post that on the site, but I think we got an opening line. So starting tomorrow, we work on line number two, my friends. We want to thank CNN radio correspondents Bob Noodles Costantini and James Roop. Rick Emerson Show produced today. And everybody, the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Southern State Radio in the newsroom. Tim Riley, executive producer, is me. Me and me, because I mangled that line again, and I'm just going to go with it. Our PA is Scotty J. The gatekeeper is Dave Zinn. Like is next. Donna Mike at 7. Stephanie Miller tomorrow, 6 to 8. And Dennis Miller at 8. We'll see you at 11. Don't forget to help the retarded. Bye now. I dreamt of something.